Hello, and thank you for tuning in to episode 11-4 of the Tech Gaming Podcast. I am your JRPG-loving host with an infinite supply of experience. My name is Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me today is the Aikido-studying antagonist with an overwhelming attack. You know her as Sage Samurage Morris Green.
Hello.
And bringing the Sailor Moon-powered stamina is our very own Blue Swim back...
What the hell was that?
Sounded like a toilet flushing.
Yes. Hello, Blue.
I wonder if I'd lose my life savings if I did a hentai of Master Etna, dude.
I ain't gonna follow that up, but bringing the charisma is that charmer from the farmer country, Jeremy Lawman Lamont.
The farmer country. Wow. We should have played the toilet flushing sound effect right now.
Are there a lot of crops in Utah? Not really.
You know, we have all of that. We have all of that.
We have all that? Okay. I'm just jealous because I don't see very many crops.
We have a lot of brine shrimp growing in our lake, and the annual brine shrimp harvest is a bumper crop.
Is it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It's delectable. Just like what I'm going to start off with, something not so delectable. My first impression, Damage Inc., Pacific Squadrons, World War II. Did you guys hear about this game?
Isn't it an aerial flight sim fighting type thing?
You are correct, put out by Mad Cats. Now, you guys know I like World War II history, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've read most Stephen Ambrose, Anthony Beaver's books, John Keegan, all that. This past June, I went to Hawaii. So, you know, visiting Pearl Harbor, of course, was a must for me. And I spent the better part of the day at Pearl Harbor just kind of soaking in all the details, reading about the attack, watching videos, and, of course, you know, paying my respects at the USS Arizona Memorial. And one of the things I distinctly remember is that supposedly on that day, 29 Japanese aircraft were shot down, majority from ground fire, another 8 or 9, they weren't sure, from dogfighting. And that's not the story I'm getting out of Damage Inc. So I boot up Damage Inc., and it purports to be this historical simulator. And there's even a blurb about accuracy and aircraft likenesses on the opening screen. So in the background, first you get this story told through a little animated cutscene of two brothers. They're serving in the Pacific Theater. You're one of them, and the other is Jimmy. Jimmy's a Marine. And I'll overlook that Jimmy is shot down by, I think it was looked like a Japanese missile. And missiles, of course, weren't something that the Japanese had at this time. They didn't have that technology. I'll overlook kind of the typos in the cinematics. And
oh, boy. Would it be mad? Would it not be a Mad Cats product if there wasn't something wrong with it?
Did they just add Z's everywhere? Like,
no, it was just not the word "the," but, you know, the text didn't match the dialogue there. They refer to the Air Force, even though that branch of the military didn't exist until 1947. They were called the Army Air Corps, you know, Army Air Forces at that time. But what I won't accept is the first mission had me downing over 90 Japanese zeros I'm sorry, that was the second mission. And on the first try, I actually failed out. Now, why do you ask? Why did I fail? For letting a Japanese torpedo bomber sink a ship during the Pearl Harbor stage. So let me say that again. I failed the Pearl Harbor mission for letting a bomber sink one of my ships. Wow.
Just one?
Sheesh.
Just one. So there's some historical accuracy. But let's just say you don't know. You don't even care about history. Will you have fun with Damage Inc. Anyway? I really don't think so. Just some highlights of what's wrong with the game.
You know, I still believe that the historical gold standard for accuracy in video games is 1941, you know, in the Midway game.
Didn't it start with 42?
Was it 1942? Because I'm trying to remember in the arcade. Wasn't there one in the arcade and then there was one on home consoles?
1942.
Maybe it went from 1942 to 1943.
Yes, it went 42 to 43.
Okay. I get my years mixed up. But like I said, they're all so historically accurate. For a long time, I thought that those, like, flying fortress, like, you know, those with all the guns all over the wings and stuff. I'm like, wow, how did we survive that?
Yeah, and then those red and white swirls.
I know.
History, that's amazing. Not in the history books.
This is like historically accurate as Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow.
Oh my god, that movie is so... I wanted that movie to be good, and it's so bad.
kind of reminds me of, what was that, Crimson Skies? For the original Xbox. It's kind of like that, but without the suck.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like Call of Duty with the zombies.
Back to Damage Inc. Let me get back on track here. One of the problems I think with many World War II aircraft sims is that missions have you move towards like a yellow, in this case they're yellow highlighted enemy. It's almost like you have this HUD, which isn't very realistic. You fire, you take them down, and then you move towards the next enemy, and then you repeat that over and over and over again on some missions. Now, there is bombing, for instance, is kind of fun, but it takes a while to get there, and there are missions where you just fire over and over, and you wipe out, you know, the whole Japanese air fleet at a couple of goes there. Glitches prohibit you on a number of times. I couldn't finish a level. Triggers weren't counted. You know, I was supposed to kill a certain number of things. I was in an infinite loop. Ground units just fell through the ground. Sometimes the ground units are actually invisible. The frame rate, let me touch on the frame rate, is terrible. In game, sometimes there's a pause in the middle of combat for like a full second.
What?
The frame rate is under 30, and at worst case scenario, it turns into a slideshow. Which makes aiming, you know, especially for a World War II game, pretty difficult. Now, you are given a little helper. You can slow down time. I think it may be infinite. I barely used it because the game was, you know, pretty easy as is, and I felt like I was cheating anyway. The last thing I want to touch on is your AI partners. They do absolutely nothing. They're just around to fill the skies and make sure that there's some action going on. They won't help, you know, get a bogey off your tail. They won't shoot down foes. They just fly around.
Can you even tell them apart from the enemies?
Yeah, oh yeah, you can. There's a different, you know, indicator there.
You know, Star Wars Rogue Squad came out, what, 10 or 11 years ago? Something like that. And that had, like, the ability to control some of your wingmen. But this comes out in the modern era, and it doesn't have anything like that?
Yeah. Now, the one thing, if you look at still screenshots, the ships themselves, the battleships, and the planes are well rendered. So whoever was doing that, hats off to you. But to everyone else on the team, I did not have fun at all with Damage Inc. It does come with a stick, and the stick is kind of the selling point. The one thing I thought when Mad Catz was bringing this out, I thought, oh, they're bringing a flight stick, so therefore the quality of Damage Inc. must be good. Like, this is a big pivotal game. This is something, you know, essential for any air combat fan. But the stick is pretty much works with most. I played it with Blazing Angels, Ace Combat, a number of different games, except for the lack of force feedback, which is understandable considering the price. It's pretty solid. The game itself is pretty much awful. Stay away at all costs on that one.
So none of the buttons on the joystick or flight stick dropped out at any point?
Actually, the first
fight stick, that was a reference to the old tournament fight stick.
The first one that they sent me did not work at all. It was station, and they have, I think, worked to try to overcome that. But when things like that happen, you know, you're not helping the situation. So there are some of their tournament sticks I've played and actually are pretty solid. And I believe I have a Street Fighter one that's a Mad Catz.
I have the same one too. That's kind of why I said half the buttons dropping out. Because I got like one of the early models before they updated whatever the hell that board's called, the PVC board or something like that. So, like, if you move it a certain way, sometimes the buttons will drop out or, like, you won't be able to kick or move or anything like that. And I actually had to send it back and
So the bottom line is wait for the Pelican-branded Panzer Tank Simulator?
Yes. That would be kind of awesome. I wouldn't mind Dick's doing that.
You know, people might have said the same thing about a Mad Catz World War II flight combat simulator.
Yeah, I could see that. But, you know, it's not the hardware. It's the software. Really deserves better. So a little bit more upbeat. I got a couple of SNK minis in this week. First one is Chopper 1. Get to the choppa. That the 1988 coin-op that's been converted into a PSP mini. It's a vertically scrolling shmup along the lines of 1942, not 41, and probably more could be compared to Tiger Heli. Now, typical of the era, it's almost insanely difficult, and the challenge doesn't really come from swarms of enemy bullets, but more about the patterns of foes, and there's a lot of environmental objects which prohibit a clear line of fire. Thing I was going to say is that the people that the country that you're attacking, not only do they have helicopters, they got tanks on treads, which I'm always a fan of. What was that? I think it was Jackal had those. You know what I'm talking about? It's on railroad tracks.
Yeah.
Those are cool. I'm a fan of those. Anyway, they got fires.
Like the whole Godzilla thing, but in a video game.
Yeah, yeah. But the one thing that they have, which is really cool, is they got these ancient catapults. And they launch boulders at you. And they can take...
Like a trebuchet?
No, they're actual catapults.
Oh, okay.
So, no. And then next is... Next Space, which is another vertical shmup, Boston from SNK. I believe that one came out in 1987. And it reminds me, did you guys ever play the TurboGrafx game Blazing Lasers?
No.
I don't think I picked up if it was on the Wii Virtual Console, I might have looked at it. The one I got was Superstar Soldier. Never mind. I shut up now.
I think Blazing Lasers is probably one of my favorite TurboGrafx 16 shmups. No. Anyway, the whole thing behind that is that there's a ton of these power-ups, and you can find and you can kind of harness the weapon upgrade that you want and the one that you kind of like best. So you have this normal shot, and whenever you shoot a capsule, every time you shoot it, it moves up a letter. So A through H, if you shoot it once, becomes B and C, through, so on and so on. And some of the weapons, some of these secondaries, they give you things like a flamethrower. And surprisingly, the flamethrower, it sticks out, you know, maybe an inch and a half, but it works really good in a shmup. They have one thing that's a bomb you can detonate on screen. You press it once to launch, and it's almost like, throwing the football in John Madden. Then a second time to explode it. There's like crisscross beams, there's the spread shot, and all these things are used to repel, these Galaga-like formations of enemies. The one thing that people may not like is that the characters, and especially your ship, are pretty enormous. So that makes kind of dodging enemies and some of the fire pretty challenging if you don't have a secondary. So, for instance, when you're killed, you're very likely to get killed within the next couple seconds pretty quick. So that's this week in SNK Minis. I also played a little new Super Mario Brothers 2.
Ooh.
You guys play that?
No, I've kind of been trying to decide if it's even worth my time. Like, of all the games that Nintendo's come out with recently, like sequels and things, I think this is probably the least excited I've been for a Nintendo sequel in kind of a long time.
It's kind of the same way with me. It's like, New Super Mario Brothers has never really floated my boat. There's something about it that just doesn't feel like it has the same soul that the original, you know, Mario games used to have.
Yeah, I don't know about the same soul, but it definitely felt different. Like, the platforming kind of wasn't really super exciting, and it didn't have a lot of the really unique, like, Super Mario Galaxy, Super Mario 3D Land, which Super Mario 3D Land is probably one of the best entries in the Super Mario franchise and for like forever. Yeah. But then like the concept of this, from what I've seen of it, it's like, oh my God, there's gold coins everywhere. And I have a hard time really getting interested in the challenge, or like, are you going to collect billions of coins, or, you know, I don't know. And so I've just kind of been holding off to wait and see if anyone has like really been, you know, just really raving about it, and kind of nobody has really, so maybe we just haven't heard from the right people. Tell us more.
I do like it, much like you said, the coins. At least I've only got to the first three worlds. I got to like a mushroom world in the first two worlds, and there are, you know, a number of coins that you pick up, but it's not so much that it gets in the way of the level design. It's not like you're constantly trying to lick the plate clean. And so one of the things I found was I wasn't a big fan of the Wii version of New Super Mario Brothers. And one of the reasons why is I felt that it was geared more towards multiplayer in some ways, the mechanics were. But when you
I think Sean said the same thing when he played it a few weeks back.
When you played it with other people, to me it just got really frustrating. You know, it was like somebody would knock you off the screen. People didn't if you didn't work with someone and have someone that was on your same skill level, it was more frustrating than it was fun. And so I didn't dig that too much. This one, the level design, I think really takes a cue from maybe Super. What is it? There's so many Super Marios now. I lost track of the names. First NES, SNES one.
Oh, Super Mario,
Mario World.
Super Mario World. It feels a lot like that. Just kind of contextualized to 2012. But I'm having fun with it. I think the level design's cool. Some of the things. There's one of the new power ups is you have this gold kind of head, like a squarish head. As much as you jump, you leave a trail of coins behind, and so you're constantly trying to jump. And what that does is kind of send you off this crazy, this crazy kind of jumping behavior, but you still have enemies on screen, so you're more likely to lose that power-up quickly, if you're not careful with it. So kind of fun. It does have a online, not necessarily online, but a street pass mode where you play three levels and you collect as many coins as possible with a limited amount of time in there. And that is fun, but one of the things is if you die once on those three levels, you don't get any coins, so you can't really compete. And I kind of wish it was, the number of coins you collected before you died.
Wow, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, it is. It's really weird.
Does seem like an odd design choice.
Yeah.
So you mentioned a few different versions of Mario here. Now, this is a sequel to the new Super Mario Brothers on the DS, right? I mean, this is new Super Mario Brothers 2?
Yes, but what was the one on Wii?
New Super Mario Brothers Wii.
New Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, that's true.
It's actually what they call it.
I think you're right. So what is this a sequel to? Like, where are we supposed to, like, trace the lineage of this game?
It's just another Mario game.
Yeah, right. Like, that's kind of how I feel about it. And I don't know, like, the Nintendo tax, the extra $10 or whatever to play a Nintendo game. And this one's interesting because it's the first one that's available digitally, right? And it's even, isn't it, like, more expensive digitally than if you buy it?
I think it's the same price. They didn't, like, give you any sort of a discount.
I picked it up at that price for $29. No, they don't give you a discount at all.
That's supposed to be one of the benefits of digital, at least from a consumer perspective,
Yeah, but I think there's a whole idea that they're going to undermine the retail stores. Why buy it at retail if you're going to price it for significantly less online?
I mean, brick and mortar's still king, so they definitely don't want to burn any bridges, right?
Yeah. So, you guys mentioned a lot of different Marios out there, and they're all basically the same, running from left to right, princess, it's almost cliched now, princess gets stolen in the opening cinematic, but the level design, I don't know, is solid, I like it, the graphics are good, somebody posted that they didn't like the blur effect. Honestly, I didn't notice that, but I picked up a new 3DS XL. And one thing that does bother me, at least on this system, is there's a little bit of artifacting in the background. And it almost looks like sometimes when you look at a LCD, it's a little bit dirty. Sometimes you get like a little bit of discoloration, but it's the actual image itself that they use for the background.
So it's got to upscale that, right? Have you tried any other games on the larger screen?
Yeah, I tried a couple. Yeah,
And
they look blown up. They look a little bit more pixely. One of the things I noticed right away was when I was what's the name for the 3DS? Help me out, guys. When you meet people, the Street Pass.
Oh yeah,
Street Pass.
Oh yeah.
Oh, find me, or
I think that's it. Yeah, God, I'm doing terrible tonight. I noticed with that the characters they were a little bit more pixely, and some of the outline just wasn't as sharp, a little bit more jaggy. But I think that's a fair trade-off for having the bigger screen size.
Yeah, I guess I'm just trying to figure out. I mean, much like with New Super Mario Brothers 2, I've kind of been fence-sitting, and like I'm not hearing a lot of people say, yeah, go out and get this. And so I'm just kind of twiddling my thumbs.
It's the 3DS XL is supposedly going to have a $40 gaming credit at Kmart starting next week. Is that worth it at, what ends up being about $160? Is that like a jumping off point?
If you don't have a 3DS already, yes. I'd say, go out and buy it. But if you already have one, I'm not sure if that's a good enough incentive to get one.
Have you tried any of the original DS games on it? Because I know my mom's been thinking about getting either a DSi XL or 3DS XL, something like that.
It's playing a few DS games. Yeah, they're a little pixelated, but, you know, definitely kind of cool to view. Mm-hmm. Not unlike the DS XL, the image quality.
Anyway, as far as Mario goes, do you think it's worth playing, Robert?
Yeah, I do. At $40, I probably wouldn't have. And this is just me because I've played so many Mario games. This one feels very similar.
Well, I mean, it reminds me of a conversation we had previously. Jeremy, I don't think you were on the show yet, but Blue, I think you were, that Mario games tend to follow a formula, which I don't think is inherently bad, but that some of them, like Jeremy and Blue are saying, just don't, some of them don't feel quite right. Like, they don't feel like they have the feeling there. And so it sort of feels more like, okay, we need to put out another Mario, and they don't really take the time to make the ambiance feel right or whatever.
It definitely has the ambiance. One of the first underwater levels is very Nintendo-sized to me. You know, they have the little fish that swim through the water. Well, they're doing a synchronized water ballet where they're swimming around, floating around, and it's synced to the music. So it definitely has the charm. My whole thing is I've played so many Mario games that this isn't really giving me that much of a new experience. Still very fun, don't get me wrong, but nothing I haven't experienced, you know, some different. So it's really.
But you think if you're a lover of Mario and or someone who hasn't played every Mario game, that it would be worth playing?
Yes, of course. And I'm kind of, I do like the Mario games. Maybe it's nostalgia. Maybe it's I'm a platformer.
Well, I mean, let's face it. Look at some of the games from the last several years. You know, Galaxy 1 and 2, Super Mario 3D Land. I mean, it's does have a really good track record, you know, of the last several years.
Mm-hmm. I kind of wonder, though, if it's possible for these games to really stick with us the way that they used to. And I don't know if it's because we're adults now or if there's something that is just being inherently lost here. But, I mean, even new Super Mario Brothers, I mean, at the time it was the first, you know, wasn't it like the first side-scrolling platformer since Super Mario World that, you know, and everybody was really excited about it. But there was just something kind of floaty about the way it worked.
Yeah.
And the power-ups weren't the power-ups didn't really inspire. I mean, you had the shell that you could get into, and there was the big mode and the mini tiny mode, and I don't know. Like, if I try and think back to levels or specific moments in New Super Mario Brothers, I don't really think of that. You know, it's hard for me to really go back and say, wow, yeah, that was the moment in New Super Mario Brothers. Now, Super Mario 3D Land is a whole other story, and I mean, I've already said, like, it's one of the best, you know, games in the Mario franchise that I feel like has happened in a long time. But, you know, New Super Mario Brothers Wii, like Robert said, I mean, I don't know that it's really, I mean, I just don't know if this stuff is really sticking with us anymore. Mario Galaxy 2, you know, Mario Galaxy 2, by all accounts of the people who played it, was really good. I mean, it really lived up to the first game. I haven't played Super Mario Galaxy 2, but and I don't ever hear anybody talk about it either.
Jeremy, are you saying we have changed or the games have changed?
I don't know. That's what I'm trying to figure out. I mean, is it the games or is it us?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, there is part of it that's that we get older, and so therefore those things are maybe less iconic because we're more used to them. But I think part of it is the games, because there seems to have been a trend in both games and cartoons, pretty much anything animated, that as self-descriptive as it sounds, they've gotten a lot more cartoony. Like, I think it started with Super Mario 64 that they started adding all the kitschy little, you know, him being like, wahoo, and like doing more cutesy things.
Sounds like Borat in this one.
What?
He sounds a lot like Borat in this one.
See, and that's the, like, it's fine if they add cutesy things occasionally, whatever, but that's not what made Mario so solid. Like, Super Mario, it was that they were silent, they never spoke, they were very serious, and it was a simple game. Like, there wasn't a lot of extra cartoony stuff going on to sort of distract you from playing the game, which they're solid games. I mean, they're not overly complex, but they're solid.
So,
and I think that
my take on it was that when I still remember playing Super Mario Brothers for the first time, and there was something about the world that was fascinating. It had its own system of physics where things did not decelerate. You know, turtle shells would continually go on. Mario, of course, could jump. And understanding those things as you kind of learned about was just fascinating. But over time, those things really haven't changed that much. The physics is still the same, feels the same way underwater. And so maybe that fascination isn't there where I feel like, hey, I'm in a new world. But I did get some of that with Super Mario Galaxy.
Yeah. Galaxy had
with gravity. It did, you know, a lot of different things there.
I remember when I played the first Galaxy, I think it was like the first or second stage had like one of these like little tiny, I think they're like planetoids or something like that. And I remember being just like mind blown completely away when I did like a running leap and Mario is just floating around the planetoid and he like lands on the other side. Mm-hmm. That was like a wow experience for the Galaxy mm-hmm. franchise.
Oh. Is it weird also to say that it feels like the music, it may not be mm-hmm. as good as it used to be?
Yeah.
No, I think that's true.
They still use the same music, but now it doesn't feel as synthesized. But now they have, you know, the kind of the oohs and ahs that are, you know, like this a cappella group and does.
Ba ba ba. Kind of the sound.
Yeah.
It actually took me a while to think back and remember what the music even was for New Super Mario Brothers. But everybody knows like all the tracks from all the other games. And, you know, Super Mario World is kind of interesting. I saw somebody point this out the other day that all of the musical tracks in Super Mario World on the SNES, they're all based on the same tune. Did you guys know that? Did you realize that?
No.
Wait, say that again?
All of the musical tracks in Super Mario World, the Super Nintendo game, you know, the dinosaurs, they're all just variations on the same theme throughout the entire game.
Yeah, yeah. Like Yoshi's tune is always that you add drums to whatever.
But I mean, even the castles versus like being out in the jungle or whatever, they're like all the same. They're all the same song.
Kind of like the James Bond movies where you have
a little bit like that. So I guess feeling kind of tepid on New Super Mario Brothers 2, both having played it maybe, and then is it right for us to feel kind of tepid about it?
If you're burned out on it, you're probably not going to find anything, you know, really charming.
Well, and like I said, I'm not. I mean, the best experience I've had with Mario in a long time was just in the last 6 months, you know, just right before Christmas with Super Mario 3D Land. So obviously there's something they can do there that would be awesome. But I guess just whatever it was about this one, I mean, do they use a lot of interesting 3D elements?
They don't play it up too much. And I think that's really good because you're looking at the screen. It's not annoying. And I don't know. They don't overdo it. It's not their effect.
Well, I could see it either way. I mean, having going all out with a lot of like weird 3D functionality, I think could also be kind of off-putting. So maybe working within the confines of a standard, you know, 2D platformer, maybe that's it. But
I just don't want the flower guy that comes out of the pipe to jump in my face every time he pops.
Yeah, exactly. I could see that. So I don't know. Maybe at some point in the future, maybe we can all jump on that bandwagon. But I guess I'm just not feeling it right at the moment.
Do you think Mario games are the victims of maybe hype and expectations? You know, we expect it to be like the next Super Mario World, but it just ends up being just a solid Mario game. And because we are expecting it to be so much better than that.
You do have a point. If they took Mario out and they put another character in, I think this would be really good.
For a different kind of game, but not for a Mario game is what you're
right,
saying.
Right. If they placed him with the, I don't know, Rayman Rabbits.
I was going to say, what if it was Rayman? Would you still think it was a good game then?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
Are the dynamics like in-betweeny enough that it would, because the physical dynamic of Mario versus Rayman are sort of different.
Yeah, I'm just saying the character shift.
Yeah, because Rayman is kind of lame.
What?
Kind of, really.
Kind of.
You didn't like Rayman Origins?
I don't know. I liked Rayman Origins, but it was another one that I didn't. I mean, it looked great, but honestly, it really did have some really neat, like, you know, loopy, you know, like, yeah, and like really, you were always doing something different and interesting, but I don't know what it was. Something just like didn't. I don't know. I don't feel like I appreciated that game as much as I should have either.
Jeremy, you need a reprieve from platformers.
Maybe I do.
Yeah, a couple
Maybe
months.
One question. Did the coin sound effect repeating over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, did it drive you nuts?
Not until you mentioned it right now.
That is a great question, Blue. I love that question.
I didn't even notice it. They probably mixed it down pretty low in the volume.
Blue Swim, ruining people's gaming experiences retroactively one game at a time.
Bing!
Little Wario. So let's move along.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that is. Let's move along, Jeremy.
Well, I've been mostly, I'm just kind of looking over my list here. It looks like I've been spending a lot of time on my PlayStation, believe it or not. I started out the last couple weeks playing Retrograde, which is the new side-scrolling shooter, PS3 exclusive, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it's been around for a long time. I remember hearing people talk about this game, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. I can't remember what the indie venue was that it was in, but I remember hearing about this game where it's a side-scrolling shooter that plays backwards, where in retrograde you basically you start out the game having beaten the game. You know, you have to fight the final boss. You shoot him a couple of times, and, you know, hooray, he's destroyed. You start flying off, the credits are rolling, and then it all starts going backwards. Something went wrong, and there's some sort of temporal anomaly. And in order to save the galaxy from this, you know, temporal problem, you basically have to go back in time and duplicate everything that you did. At least that's the, you know, that's the fiction of it, on your way through the game the first time, you know, in this hypothetical scenario that, that didn't really happen.
How come they didn't get the irreversible license?
I, you know, it may be that,
I'm kidding. They,
yeah. It's indie, you know, they have a limited licensing budget.
Can I just say I love any game where the end goal is saving the galaxy and or the universe. There's something really fulfilling about Sabatude. I think so about Sabatude on that magnitude. I think it
I think it's overdone. I think it's kind of cliched.
No, yeah, but the whole thing though. Like side-scrolling shooters, you're always saving the galaxy, you know? And I mean the thing about this game is that it's very tongue in cheek. I mean, it's very sort of, you know, it laughs at itself when the credits are rolling, you see just all kinds of like crazy, I can't even remember what they all are, but everything is just really funny. The menus in the game are very
I want a shmup where I'm ruining the galaxy. I'm filling it up with space garbage.
Yeah, you know what? You could make that happen if you're an
But see, Robert, that's fine too, because the point is that the magnitude of the galaxy is what's okay. So fulfilling, whether it's trashing it or saving it.
For me, it's just the antithesis of saving the galaxy one more time.
Sure. Okay. That's fine. I'm just saying I like it when it's the galaxy and not like a town. Okay. I don't really give a shit about a town. I care about the galaxy.
Can you imagine how lame He-Man and the Masters of the Universe had been if it had been like He-Man and the Masters of Seattle?
Yeah. Masters of the Suburb. So here, I mean, your character's name is Rick Rocket. I mean, you just you can't take it seriously. If you're the kind of person who's really going to be like, ah, I'm tired of saving the galaxy, this game may not be for you right out of the gate. I'll just say that. So the idea here, though, is this is actually a music rhythm game. And as you are playing, you know, as you're flying backwards, all of these shots, you're seeing all of your ammunition, you know, your firepower is coming back at you from the right side of the screen as you are flying back to the left. And the enemies that you shoot, they sort of appear after the shot comes back so far. Like they would have been destroyed by the shot before, but now they exist again and the shot comes back into your ship. And then they also are shooting at you, and those shots come from the far left hand side of the screen and go back into them, if that makes sense. Are you following me so far?
Yep.
Yeah.
So everything is just playing backwards, and it's laid out in kind of a sort of like a rose kind of thing, where theoretically when you're moving from top to bottom, you have these different,
like paths.
It's almost like, it's almost like a, yeah, exactly. That's the note highway. That's exactly what I was going for. And, the neat thing about this game is that you can play it either with a controller or you can play it with a guitar. You can actually, you get out one of your, Rock Band or Guitar Hero guitars.
Oh.
And you can play it either way.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it plays a little bit differently. I mean, I really enjoy, in fact, when I played this, I played it with the guitar controller. And the last game that I had played that was similar to this, did any of you guys ever play, or do you remember Fret Nice?
Yes, I reviewed that one.
A couple years ago?
Tecmo.
Okay. Yeah.
It was the platformer.
That's right. It was a platformer. And the idea was really cool. But to me, and I don't know if other people have better guitar controllers, but to me the problem with Fret Nice was that the way that you would jump is you would tilt your guitar.
Right.
And so if your tilt sensor isn't the best,
quick enough, yeah.
Yeah, or I mean I frankly would have a hard time getting that thing to fire. You know, I would be just like, just like jamming that thing up in the air and finally snap the thing over my leg. No, I didn't do that. But but in this case, it's not that you're striking.
Fret Nice.
Yeah, no. And you know what, let me just say about Fret Nice, a really awesome idea.
Yeah.
I wish I had a guitar that I could use to play it. In fact, that game almost single-handedly made me want to go go out and mod my guitar with one of those, you know, mercury tilt sensors. I guess you can get a fancy tilt sensor to put into there, because the guitar comes with just a pair of like ball bearings hooked up to some electrode or something, and that's how it kind of figures it out. But anyway, I do want to go back and play Fret Nice with the guitar the way that it was intended. It had a great soundtrack. The soundtrack in Retrograde, also very good. It's a little more electronic sounding than Chippy, but it definitely grows on you. All of the levels, there are a limited number of levels in this. I want to say there are 12 levels, 10 levels, something like that. And every level has its own unique soundtrack. And so we were talking about the rows. So every row in this backwards side scroller is it corresponds to one of the frets on your guitar controller. So red, green, yellow, blue, red, whatever it is. And you use that to dodge up and down. So you're dodging the shots that are coming backwards while also trying to hit the shots that are coming from you and suck those in, you know, and you actually strum the guitar, or if you're playing with the controller, you hit the button to shoot the shot or to unshoot the shot. Mm-hmm. And they have different kinds of shots that you can do. So sometimes you'll just have a single kind of a, you know, boom, 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 kind of a single shot kind of thing. Sometimes you'll have a spray of missiles that'll come in and you have to kind of strum, 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 you know, just really like pepper the field and suck those little missiles all back in.
So if you, okay, one of your shots you miss, what happens in the game? You miss your own shot.
Yeah, that you have kind of a
paradox, right?
Yeah, well, you have a life meter in the top corner, and it's sort of the you know, the temporal integrity of the galaxy,
right?
I guess,
sure.
Because of course you have a meter that will measure
space-time
that
continuum. Yeah.
Exactly. If you miss too many, then the space-time continuum kind of messes up. And every once in a while you'll hit special shots that will refill that, so it's kind of like you get some life back, or you'll hit a particular shot that'll start doubling your points. The other interesting thing is that your score also counts down, and I didn't really look at this close enough, but the score is kind of in reverse, which I think is kind of cool. The highest score is actually the worst, and again, they go back when you're looking at the leaderboards, and it's like, you know, who's got the lowest score or whatever. I never really looked close to see what happens between a high score comparatively to a low score, and if you just don't count down all the way to zero or what exactly happens. But I thought that was kind of funny as well. The price of this game, you can actually do this one of two ways, from what I understand. You can either get the $10 version of the game, which is actually pretty much just the game itself, or you can get the $15 version that bundles with the soundtrack. And I kind of feel like, I think $15 might be a little bit much to pay for this. I mean, if you're interested in getting out your guitar controller, which I am, I mean, I'm all about the peripherals, so I was like, oh yeah, a chance to get that thing out. You might, you know, and if you liked Fret Nice, fans of the genre, you know, people, if you liked Fret Nice, you might like, but 15 is a little bit much, but since they throw in the soundtrack, I could maybe see it. I could see you getting the bundle, or you can just get the game itself for $10.
Now, one thing is, does it feel gimmicky?
I think anytime you're getting out a guitar controller, you got to kind of ask yourself how you feel about that.
That's not what I'm really thinking about. I'm thinking about more of the backwards gameplay.
Like, does it act? So are you talking about the guitar? So the backwards gameplay gimmicky?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. I mean, in that it's the only game that I'm aware of that plays backwards like that. You know, it's a little bit, it kind of reminds me, if you were to compare this to any real shooter, I mean, it's almost more like a bullet hell shooter that only has five places you can go to.
Okay.
Because the path that you're trying to go is telegraphed.
Isn't that kind of the game and watch?
Kind of, yeah. It's a little, I mean, and it does feel a little simple. I mean, I'll be honest, it's not, you know, super high production value. I mean, it looks good, and it sounds really good, and it's kind of just a neat challenge in that way. But I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a game that plays backwards. So you're on one side trying to hit certain spots to suck in these shots, trying to dodge the stuff that's coming up from behind you. You know, you generally will get to a point where you've got only one path to go on, so that, you know, for an optimal score, you're going to be, you know, doing it a certain way. So unless you are the kind of person who really likes to, you know, kind of run through something until it's perfect, there is also an issue of limited playability here.
I'm just thinking about movies that play around with, you know, don't offer a linear chronology. And was thinking about, you know, if, say, a Quentin Tarantino movie was put in order, if Pulp Fiction was put in order, would it have the same power? So I was thinking, if this game played it straight, would it still be interesting? Or is the hook that it is, in fact, backwards?
That, I mean, that is really it. You know, that's the thing. And then, you know, if you like your guitar, you can get out the guitar. And, I mean, it kind of has that double hook, so there's two
Jeremy,
gimmicks.
You were looking for an excuse to bring out that guitar.
I really was. And, you know, little bit later on, I was going to say, we'll hear from Blue. There was exactly a reason for me not to be able to get out my guitar. So in that sense, if you were disappointed that you couldn't get your guitar out for Rock Band Blitz Retrograde. The only other thing I want to say about Retrograde is that for me, the biggest downside of it was in terms of difficulty, it does feel a little bit cheap because with all of that stuff flying back and forth, I found that it was sometimes hard to really tell what was going on. Lots of different effects, you know, a lot of waves and you know, space junk and things flying around. So it's
space junk. That's my plan to take over the galaxy.
Maybe you have already gone back in time and placed the space junk into Retrograde. Yes.
Do you realize how filthy that sounds? Just think
about it. Space junk.
Retroactive, you've gone back and placed your.
There's
space
your title, space junk.
Into the.
You know where tentacle porn comes from? Space junk.
Space junk. So Retrograde, PlayStation Network downloadable, $10 or $15 if you want the soundtrack. I believe it has a demo. Don't take my word for it on that. You may need to take a look into that. But you know what? If you view a video on it, Retro/Grade is the name of it, you'll get an idea pretty quickly of whether it's the kind of thing that you would be interested in or not. So.
You know what? Every game should have a demo. There's like no reason for it. I mean, other than huge, huge RPG games, because I don't know what they... I mean, you know what it's about. There's no reason to have a demo. But, like, we should just make demos of everything.
I think Microsoft actually did... had a really good idea with making demos or trial games mandatory on Xbox Live.
Can I be controversial here? And I want to say, and I know, Sage, you and I had a thing a couple weeks ago, but I want to say that my opinion is exactly the opposite of Sage's. I can totally see why. Well, because here's the thing. If I were to do a demo, if I put myself in the position of a developer or a publisher, I would want to put out a demo that people are not going to be able to play and say, well... You know, that's enough for me. I've played enough of that game. That's about as much as I wanted. So if I were to put out a demo, I would put out a demo of a giant game, you know, an 80-hour RPG so that people could get an idea of what it was they wanted to play. And I would not put out a demo for a game that was smaller because then you run the risk. I mean, if you've got a game that is 10 levels and you give somebody one level, they could pretty much play that one level.
But only if it's a boring game. And if it's a really boring game, then they're going to want their money back and bitch about it anyway. Like, Fez put out a demo that was one little level, and that's a short game, but that one level actually made me want to buy the game and play more because it was like, oh, this is intriguing, and I like how this plays, and I want to play more.
And now there's hooks, like, what is it, the Resident Evil demo for 3DS. You can only play that, I think it was 30 times. God, I'd like to be the person who played that 30 times. But what if that was reduced to, say, 3?
Sure.
Yeah, in fact,
that would make sense.
Just earlier today, I was seeing that there was a demo for... gosh, what was it? Something on iOS that would delete itself after 5 plays or something like that?
Yeah.
What was that? Did you see what that was?
No, but I know I've seen that with other games. I know what you're talking about.
I mean, that's the
Your
thing.
Facebook.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, Facebook. If I were doing demos, I mean, if it were my call to make, and I know we're getting off topic a little bit here, but I would actually do things the way the Q Games people do it, the Pixel Junk people, yes. Where they'll release a demo, but they won't do it for 2 or 3 weeks. So that way, the people who are interested in buying the game, you know, you don't have any, you know, because in that case, the best you're going to do with a demo is somebody's going to continue to decide to make their purchase. Worst case, somebody gets the demo and decides, you know what, that's pretty much all I need, and then they don't buy it.
That's true, but I wonder how many of those people would not play the game at all. Like, they would not go buy it at all if there was no demo option because they don't really care about the game to begin. I mean, sure, some of them will play and be like, that's all I need, but some of those people who are saying that are probably people who wouldn't have bought it at all, and at least if the demo is decent, even if they're not interested in that game, they may remember that that company put out a demo that they thought was pretty cool, and therefore the next game the company puts out, they might look harder at purchasing instead of, you know, just writing them off completely.
Yeah, that's possible. The other thing, too, is if you release a demo later on, you sort of get two launches. You get the one that's, you know, the official one, and it's like, oh, hey, the demo came out. I might try that. So that's where, I mean, don't dissuade the people who are going to get it, you know, right away, but then also you can still get the people who are maybe thinking about it. I don't know. Like I said, I realized that was a digression from the actual topic at hand, but I think about that sometimes, and I know that from a consumer standpoint, you know, I know that we want to be able to play as much as we can and you know, not have to make a commitment, but I sometimes think about it from a developer or publisher standpoint. Like, how would I do it? And I think I would probably do it a little bit like the Q Games people do it.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. You know which game doesn't need a demo?
What's that?
Super House of Dead Ninjas, because it's free.
Yeah, and it's awesome.
It is the most amazing game, not because
the Super House of Dead Ninjas.
Have you played it, right? You're not just...
I'm not quite... Yeah. I've heard the name, but I don't quite know
play it.
Anything.
It's like the greatest 16-bit game you've never
Robert,
played.
Robert, you reviewed it, right?
No, no, like, I didn't review it, but I always talk about
it. But you talked about it on the podcast.
Yes.
What system is it on?
No, it's just a Flash-based game.
Oh,
you go to Adult Swim.
Yeah, it's an Adult Swim game.
And you got to use a keyboard blue, but may have a remedy down the pipeline for you. But it's just a great, great game.
Is there a word for keyboard phobia? Because I want to put it on a shirt and send it to you, Blue.
WASD phobia.
WASD? Oh, that makes sense.
I swear, I
fear of WASDs.
Mouse look. Like, I had a really good friend who was really good at playing first-person shooters with two analog sticks, but as soon as you put him in front of, like, a mouse, he just was backwards and upside down. It was amazing.
Well, they're totally different.
I know, but it seems like, you know, I think you can kind of get the idea of, like, move your cursor and that's where your gun points, but this guy could not. I know he's a good friend, so I don't want to make fun of him or anything, but...
No, I can totally relate. I can totally relate. That's a really, like, I made a
mouse
big
look
commitment.
Is move your cursor. That's where your gun points.
Yeah. I made a big commitment to getting back into mouse keyboard control, like, a while ago, not recently, because I hadn't played computer games in so long, and then I wanted to be able to have that option, and so, but I had a lot of friends who made fun of me because I am a decent gamer, but I could not. It's like, I think because it's more sensitive, even if you turn it down, like the amount that you move for the amount that it moves on screen is a different proportion than when you're using analog sticks, which is why I think it's better for some games because you have more sophisticated.
Contacted by a company just today, they're sending one out. They have a joystick attachment for a keyboard, which fits over the WASD keys. So I'll be checking.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat idea.
Yeah, it is.
Speaking of things coming out with games, Robert, did you get that email that I then forwarded to you, but I didn't know if you had already gotten it, about Hawken, that they're coming out with a virtual reality?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Are you kidding me? Like, mechs with virtual reality? I cannot tell you how excited I am. And the game will still be free to play, but then they will sell the virtual reality headset for whatever amount. I don't think they haven't decided
as long
yet.
If they put steampunk in there, then you wouldn't leave the house.
Do they have, like, Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball in it? If so, sold!
Oh my god, can you imagine Dishonored virtual reality? Oh my god.
All right.
I would never leave the house.
Enough dreaming. Jeremy, tell me about your father.
Actually, before we do that, let me just really briefly mention that kind of topical since we were talking about it, but I do want to briefly mention another game I was playing, Counter-Strike Global Offensive, specifically because I actually had I got Counter-Strike Global Offensive, which was just recently released on PC, Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and I specifically got the PlayStation 3 version because of the input device. PlayStation 3 version includes support for the PlayStation Move, which I wanted to try out because I have historically – I mean, we all, I guess, pretty much have historically played Counter-Strike on PC with the mouse and keyboard, and in the discussion of, you know, joystick keyboards and things like that, I really wanted to try this on the PS3 because – the PC version is basically like Counter-Strike Source. The Xbox had really nothing going for it. It didn't have anything new. There had been previous versions of Counter-Strike. But the PlayStation version had Move support, which I really wanted to try out because I have this running fascination with different kinds of input devices, and I'm really interested in seeing how they did the Move implementation. I won't say much about Counter-Strike other than it is basically the authentic Counter-Strike experience. One interesting thing that I found, especially on the PlayStation, was that the matches that I got into were full of people using their headsets. It was really amazing for PlayStation Network. A lot of people on their headphones, headsets, and they were all kids being assholes. So it really was truly the authentic Counter-Strike experience, doing Beavis and Butthead voices and just kind of generally, you know,
Jeremy,
being unpleasant.
You weren't in home?
Nobody talked in home after they removed the headset functionality. There was just a lot of dancing in home. So
I thought they put it back in.
Yeah. I think you can do it in your private spaces, but I don't think you can get on your headset just out in the plaza.
You can use the mic on your private space?
Yeah, this is just becoming disgusting.
anyway, so Counter-Strike Global Offensive on PS3, it actually works pretty well with the Move. They give you a lot of options to set your sensitivity settings. I wasn't exactly getting up to the point where I could, you know, pwn a lot of noobs, but it was really passable for the Move. And in the broad range of Move implementation, from the really good like Killzone to the really terrible like a forthcoming new free-to-play game on the PlayStation, which shall not be named because it's still in a beta with a non-disclosure. Maybe, I won't say one way or the other, but some games just have really, really terrible Move implementation.
PS Plus subscribers can.
Yeah, I think the NDA is still on, though. Anyway, they're not going to listen to this. But let me just tell you about Dust. Instead of moving it like a pointer, like they do in Killzone, or like in any rational implementation of the Move, do you know what they do? They make it so that the relative position of the Move controller is actually what determines where. So if you want to shoot up, you have to actually raise your arm all the way up so that your cursor is like up on the top of the screen, or move it all the way to the left or all the way to the right. You can't just point up there. You have to move the whole thing up there. Anyway, so that's probably the piss poorest implementation, all the way up to, you know, some really well done pointer style implementations. Counter-Strike does use the pointer, works really well with the Move and the nav controller. Like I said, they give you customization options. Works really well. I'd recommend it if you're looking for Counter-Strike and you don't want to get it on the PC. It also does support mouse and keyboard on the PS3. Like I said, I just kind of wanted to blow through that really quickly because it was sort of appropriate to what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Now, Robert, hit me with your best segue.
Tell me about your father.
Okay. Who is your daddy and what does he do? Yes. Is that what it is?
That could be Arnold.
Get to the chopper. So the other game,
The Expendables 2 is terrible.
It is?
It is.
Oh, that's good. I mean, it's
yeah, but no. I mean, he's not really in it, and it's not that there are moments where it's sort of funny enough, but most of it is like, come on. It's just, and I'm an action movie fan, but like, it's pretty bad, and the dialogue is pretty bad.
Isn't it supposed to be funny, though? Like, isn't The Expendables?
It is, but it's not funny enough to be funny. Like, it's not, it's like, it dances that border between trying to be seriously self-mocking and trying to be campy, and because it doesn't really commit either way, it just sort of feels like they don't know how to be funny.
I got a movie for you if you like action movies, Sage.
I do.
Sleepless Night.
Okay. Is it good?
Yeah, it's a French film. Did you like Taken?
Yeah, I like it pretty okay.
Okay, well, this one's a hell of a lot better.
There's a sequel coming out to Taken. Did you see that?
It's called Tekken 2. No. No, I did not. No, I thought this was, you know, I thought Taken was good, but this was really intense. And I won't say anything more, spoil it, but it's a French film, not too much dialogue. So I know people that don't like to read subtitles won't have to suffer too much, but really cool what they do.
Okay, I'll check it out. Anyway, sorry to interrupt you, Jeremy. It was just all the Arnold impressions.
I wish we could do more Arnold impressions.
it is not a tumor.
Not a tumor. Okay, no, that's it. I'll stop
I'll
there.
Be back.
Yeah, let's all get it out.
Good.
So what we were aiming for, though, was your father. Your father. I sort of hinted in the show thread from the last show that the great 2012 hype train, de-hype train, the disappointments of the critical darlings of 2012 has come to an end with the release of Poppo and Yo on the PlayStation 3, PlayStation Network.
The train derailed? Or did he get back on
track? Well, it was sort of the de-hype train, so maybe it came to the end of the line and then turned around. I've got to work on my metaphor a little bit here.
Went back to the station.
Speaking of metaphors, though...
Who's the conductor?
speaking of metaphors, Poppo and Yo, I think everybody kind of knows the premise of Poppo and Yo, right? Poppo and Yo is essentially a metaphor for the domestic abuse or the abusive relationship of... maybe not personally, but Vander Caballero, the designer, and you know his father. So it's a little bit of an autobiographical thing, but I think it in general works as a larger metaphor.
And people might remember that we were all super excited about it when we went and saw it 2 years ago at E3.
Yeah, this I believe was one of the PlayStation's Indie Pub Fund games, and so they, you know, they that crew, the very indie cred people, you know, they were very up on it. I don't know that I really saw a lot of people like really like, oh yes, you know, like this is going to be such a great game. But Sage I think people
was.
Were at least people
Sage
were at least looking forward to it. I think people were at least looking forward to it. So let's talk about the premise of this game really quickly. The idea of it is that you play as a young boy named Kiko. And that's Q-U-I-C-O, Kiko. And he begins, you know, this metaphor thing, I don't think it really counts as a spoiler or anything because they've been talking about it right from the beginning. The game opens with a dedication, you know, to my mother and brothers and sisters and you know, our monstrous father or something like that. And it's okay. Right. So it's to my mother, brothers, and sisters with whom I survived the monster in my father.
Yes.
So the idea is that this boy Kiko, he begins, and you're sort of in this closet, sort of cowering from something that's stomping around outside. He catches a glimpse of some graffiti or some type of hieroglyph that is it appears in his closet, and he uses it to exit out into the neighborhood, the kind of a favela, you know, a Brazilian favela kind of environment, and he begins this you know, this wandering through the barrios, and he comes across a girl, Alejandra, who basically kind of guides him, and you start to learn mechanics about the game. It's ostensibly it's kind of a platformer, but it's not a really what we would consider kind of a modern platformer. Let me expound on that a little bit, because this isn't a platformer where you as the character are doing a lot of jumping or climbing or, you know, parkour. I mean, it's not that kind of platforming, but the idea of the game is that you want to try and traverse and get from one place to another. But the unique way in which this is done is in kind of the metaphorical sense that you know that the game is about this monster, this father figure. The boy kind of rearranges the environment. So using the graffiti, you kind of unlock you know, hidden passages, and staircases will appear, and they sort of peel out from the environment, and there's, you know, this brilliant white space underneath as you, you know, kind of pass through an area.
Switches.
That, switches and levers and things like that.
Did you read my review, Jeremy?
I read it until I decided that I wanted to kind of experience it for myself. Well, no, actually, the interesting thing about this is that I think that most of the reviews, kind of the prevailing attitude about this game, is actually not that positive. You know, I think for
see, I really like the premise, because the whole premise was to me very much like Pan's Labyrinth, where here is a place of escapism for a child undergoing trauma. And I thought that, you know, is the right possibility. And I love the story. I love the connection. But to me, the puzzles were just so boring. It's like, turn this crank. And there were a limited number of things you could do. And they just felt like the game itself felt like this journey. But it almost felt to me, I'm not sure if I mentioned it, like everybody was complaining about Final Fantasy XII. It was just like, here is a linear journey, and these puzzles were just to slow you from walking down that hall.
But it is a game that's more geared for, I mean, not that, I agree with you, but I think the reason for that is that it is a game more geared towards younger audiences and how they can, like, deal with that similar kind of, they have trauma in their life.
See, and I don't know
if they contextualize, I'm doing a puzzle, you know, this is how I deal with that.
But they are working through their feelings. And I sort of, I mean, I don't know, and maybe you didn't mean, Sage, that the game itself is geared toward younger people. And I'm actually going to try and play it with my kids a little bit and see. I mean, it might be too abstract for them to really understand, you know, how to interact with the environment. But I agree with Sage in that one of the reasons why I really liked the puzzle elements and really the what we call the gameplay itself is that I felt like it really extended the metaphor of what's actually happening here. The character Kiko, like I said, this is a platformer, not in the way that Assassin's Creed is a platform type environment. It's not, you know, I mean, it's not Prince of Persia. It's not even God of War. I mean, the character can jump, but that's about it. There's no wall hanging, no nothing like that. The character is not
there,
a powerful
there is,
character.
What's her name?
Lula.
Right.
So,
and here's one of my problems with it. There was one section early on where I'm using Lula, and she's this adorable little, you know, kind of robot that clings to you. And it's a very, you know, kind of emotional thing. thing, but it's just so simple. And she allows you to not quite double jump, but to extend your jump with a booster pack. And so there was – at one point, I was standing on top of, I guess, a house, and diagonally from me was another house. And I knew I had to get across there. But one of the things was I tried to do kind of a straight shot, but the game wouldn't let me. As soon as I got to the edge, it would just my jetpack would fall, and I'd fall to the ground. And I did that like 5 or 6 times. And it was almost like I was hitting this invisible wall. And I encountered this number of times in the game. And when you say, Sage, you know, maybe this is geared towards younger players, I can't help but think younger players are going to be really kind of frustrated with this. Because some of the jumping, and it's not that it's difficult, it just lacked polish, or it almost felt like there were some invisible walls. And so I approached it from a different angle, and sure enough, I made it. But the jump probably there was a little bit longer.
Right, yeah, but I didn't mean that there weren't technical problems. I just mean that the simplicity of it, I think, is geared more for. And the fact that your character can't do a lot physically and has to slowly move through this world, right, I think is a nice analogy for a young person who is trapped in a situation and can't move through it super quickly and super easily and with a lot of power.
Yeah, and I think we should acknowledge, I mean, Robert, you mentioned, and I'm kind of curious just really quickly, did you play pre-release or post-release?
Post-release with the first patch.
With the patch? Yeah, the patch. So there was a day one patch, and most of the reviews that are out there, I think, generally had problems with technical jank. And I think I need to get this out there because the game has a degree of jank to it.
Oh, yeah.
This is not what I would call a, you know, AAA production value kind of game. You know, there are collision detection issues. You know, am I going to fall off the edge of this, you know, platform? Am I going to hit?
Sometimes Daddy throws me in a corner and he keeps throwing me.
Somebody's
going to burn in hell.
We haven't even gotten to them.
No, that's the game.
Yeah, but there are you know, there are definitely those kinds of issues, and in that sense, I kind of feel like this is somewhat in the same way that I felt like, you know, Flower was. People said that anybody could play it, but I feel like the people who would appreciate it most are the people who are sort of familiar with the idiosyncrasies of games. Like the kind of person who goes to, you know, goes down a hallway in a game and tries to open all of the doors because they're just textures painted on the thing and can't figure out why that is. I kind of feel like that is the caliber of player that won't really have a good time with Poppo and Yo. I think for somebody who is a little more well versed in the language or the tropes, I guess you might say, of games, I think would be able to look past some of those things and to make some deeper associations with what's going on mm-hmm. in the game. But there definitely is a level of jank, and from what I understand, the pre-release version had actual game-stopping bugs. I will say that I did encounter one game-stopping bug where dialogue text would not display, and then when I tried to enter menus, the menu text wouldn't display. Luckily, the game saves frequently, and so I didn't lose really any progress at all, but that is the kind of thing that happens.
I was carrying a coconut, and I couldn't drop it or throw it.
yeah. So be prepared for that. But such is my love of what this game has done, I basically was able to overlook all of that. Mm-hmm. As you progress through the game, you eventually come across, like Robert had said, Lula, your sort of jetpack robot.
And he's got to say her name every time he uses her. Lula.
Yeah. Lula.
Yeah, but this is not the only game that does that. That was Shadow of the Colossus too, or anything else. And call his horse. And
yeah, I'm not a fan of saying the exact same thing every time. Speaking of,
you like
that's the coin, Rory.
Yeah. So, and again, if those are the kinds of things that really bother you, maybe it would be better for you to stay away. But so let's just sort of get through the monster really quickly. So eventually you come across the monster who is the titular Poppo, the character that represents the father here. And the idea of the game is that you are trying to eventually cure monster of his problem, which is that normally he's kind of docile. He doesn't really interact with you very much. Yeah. Some people said, and you know, here's another place where I disagree with reviews, because as much as I love the game, I never really felt like this great deep connection to this monster either. It wasn't like, oh, my father, and then, oh no, he's attacking me. Like, I didn't really have that. It was more like this monster was kind of there, and you're sort of stuck with him.
But I felt that was really strong that they articulated that. Like, yes. Dad's in the house, he's there, he's probably watching TV, he's drinking over in the corner, and you don't have a connection. He doesn't talk to you, he doesn't ask how school was, and I thought that really worked.
That's absolutely right, and that's exactly how I feel about it, is that you don't really form much of an attachment to the monster. He's there to sort of sometimes help you with puzzles. You can bounce on his tummy and get up to higher places.
Which I thought was kind of weird. What does that represent?
It is a little weird.
Because sometimes, because
that's like when he's drunk, you're going into his wallet and stealing money, so you're bouncing out of the house.
Sometimes an abusive father will be there for you. That's almost what makes it worse, is that it's not consistently that they're a monster. It's that sometimes
specifically, you can jump on his stomach when he's sleeping.
Well, he's drunk and passed out.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe has a beer gut.
He does. He has a huge beer gut.
Yeah, but anyway, so that was another place where I sort of disagreed with some of the reviews that were out there. Was I don't think the monster is really a very sympathetic kind of creature. He's just sort of there, and you're stuck with him. And just like, as you said, Robert, like a child who is in that situation, you've got your parent there, you're stuck with him. That's it.
No, I actually think the depiction of the relationship was there. It's like he was there. Sometimes he'd kind of do his own thing, but yeah, there was this, you couldn't really escape from him. But in some ways, you almost needed him to get past certain elements of the.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's another way that I felt like, because I think that was something else that people really felt like, oh, what's with this monster? Like, am I really, big deal? I don't really care. It's a chore. I don't want to have to deal with him. But again, I feel like the metaphor of it really kind of outweighs that, like, oh, am I constantly entertained? Well, no, but this is what we're trying to do here.
Yep.
So eventually, and again, I don't want to get too much into spoilers, but the other side of this too is that, I mean, this game has a really great ending, and the thing is that even though it telegraphs to you,
I'm sorry, Jeremy, I wanted to say one thing. I was kind of joking around about the abuse, how abuse is depicted, and one of the things is that if a monster gets in a certain state, he'll kind of, if he gets too close, he'll kind of pick you and throw you, and then you go through this animation. But I kind of wanted something more. I didn't feel like that really articulated a sense of horror. It was more like just kind of an annoyance.
You wanted some jibs?
No, I didn't want that, but I wanted something that, I don't know, it just felt like he's more annoying than anything.
Yeah, I mean, there really is no, this game doesn't really have a fail state either, unless you find yourself stuck in some sort of bug. But, you can fall off platforms to your, demise, or you can, you don't really die. It just resets you. And the same thing with the monster. When the monster is in its enraged state and it catches you, it'll beat you up a bit and throw you. But there's not really anything beyond that that really lasts. And again, I'm not sure that I'm really too bothered by that, but I could understand maybe, like I said, generally the number of ways in which you can interact with the environment are very clearly defined. I mean, it's, here's this puzzle, there's one solution to this puzzle.
Yeah.
So, I guess in that sense, if that sort of thing disappoints you, I mean, it's definitely not like Portal, where you have a system in place and then you can use that system to just get creative and do those kinds of things. I mean, they definitely, they definitely constructed an experience or a pathway that they wanted you to follow through this game.
Yep.
And the other thing that I want to say, that's probably about all I really want to say about that part of it. I mean, the game, eventually there are changes to some of the characters, different relationships are formed and broken. And, eventually at the end, it kind of brings it all together. Some people find it to be a very heavy-handed ending. To me, though, the thing about this is that I saw some people complaining, on Twitter or wherever that, oh, well, good job telling me the big ending. Like, why, you can't beat me over the head with your metaphor and then expect me to feel anything about it. And I found that really interesting because I actually, like I said, the game begins with this dedication. I mean, they make whatever you read about or heard about in interviews or anything like that, they come out right at the front and they tell you what this game is about. I mean, it is no secret. And any reasonably intelligent person can probably figure out where it's going and what's going to happen to it. But the way that they execute it, it's like there's two kinds of drama in movies, right? There's the drama where, oh my God, I didn't know that Darth Vader was Luke's father. And then there's the other kind of drama that, you as the viewer, don't go into the barn. The killer's in the barn. Mm-hmm. But the characters don't know it. And so there are two different ways of approaching that. And I feel like this game has an interesting approach to the idea of spoilers, because I don't think there's really any – I would love – I know that some listeners would probably be upset if I actually just laid it all out. And then, that kind of robs from you, the ability to have that experience. But they really don't – I don't think it's really intended to be a secret or to be a surprise. Surprise even at the end when they sort of reveal to you when we've been talking about metaphors, like what are all these things metaphors for? There are events that happen and they are represented in the game as a certain thing, but then it comes back to, at the end of the game and it's revealed that, that actually it's just a representation of this other thing. Different characters might be, the idea of the frogs and the coconuts and those kinds of things. All of those, have a sort of a quote unquote real world kind of analog. And, you could say, well, what's the bouncing on the tummy and that sort of thing. Like maybe there really is something to that, I mean, maybe it's the kid, his dad's watching TV, like you said, and he's like, hey, come on, dad, let's go outside. The dad doesn't care. He's watching TV and drunk or whatever. Mm-hmm. But just generally, and maybe this is just me, but I feel like for reviews or for people who have experienced this and leave the experience primarily concerned about the straightforwardness of the puzzles or even some of the jank. And I know that there are situations that you just can't get past, but if you leave the experience and that was the thing that really bothered you, I feel a little bit like you're kind of missing the point here.
See, I have to disagree. I think that some of the jank and some of the puzzles prohibit you from having a game experience.
But again, that's like I was saying earlier about people going to try and open the doors. Mm-hmm. Is that jank that you try that you think that you can go through a door?
It's not so much that, but there's a certain level of immersion I expect within a game, and I think that some of the bugs, some of the glitches prohibited that, where I was not thinking about the narrative. I wasn't thinking about the allegory at hand. Instead, I was thinking about why is this not working?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's definitely in a medium-like
And that has to do with pulling me out of the narrative, where my mind should be focused on what's going on, I'm concerned for the characters, narrative arc, all those things. I wasn't thinking about that. So in that case, I feel a little bit differently than you.
Yeah, and I can see that too. But like I said, I think the thing that really struck me was how the nature of the puzzles and the nature of the way that they've sort of laid out the path through this game. Like Sage was saying earlier, the idea that you struggle with something, and again, I don't think their intent is that you have to struggle with technical jank. And like I said, that's a metaphor for something. It could be. But that was really what it got scored down on a lot of those early reviews. And I think on one hand, it's one thing for me to say, well, you're missing the point. On the other hand, you kind of have to live with the launch that you have to live with the game that you launch with. So for them to have had those issues in there, mm-hmm. And for that to have passed whatever certification process, I think they legitimately, took some hits on that. But I think overall, the idea behind Papo and Yo, the sort of that there's almost a breaking the fourth wall kind of concept to it, where you, the player, are experiencing this kind of frustration or this idea of unlocking and moving forward and changing your environment. And to me, that is something that none of the other games that we've had, all the things I've talked about being disappointed with all the way back to Journey, they just didn't quite have the same ability for me to go back and to think about it again and again and again, like I do with Papo and Yo. And I realize that may not be the kind of experience that everybody's looking for. But for me, in terms of the, like I said, the long-standing chain of pre-release hype, indie darlings whatever you want to call those, to me, this is probably of anything this year in that $15 downloadable space. Probably the most enjoyable experience that I had, and it's short.
Wow.
It's like 3 hours.
Really, it is.
And I can't think of any. I mean, I tried really hard. I was thinking back about all those Dyad and Fez and Spelunky and mm-hmm. God, what else came out this year? Like I said, Journey. I mean, even the other stuff I talked about, Counter-Strike and Retrograde. One of the neat things about literature or movies, I always kind of think about this. Like, do you remember the Seinfeld joke where he talked about, well, I read Moby Dick again, and, you know, the second time, Ahab and the whale become very good friends. And he always talked about, like, why would you go back and look at something? But on the other hand, you look at things like, you know, far be it for me to make the comparison, but things like Shakespeare, you know, like Hamlet, where you can go back for years and years and years, and they can teach the thing in schools, and you can go back and look at it again. And Papo Nioh was the first game that I felt this year even really challenged me to go back and to think about what it was that I had just done, and to, you know, start picking it apart again and trying to decide, you know, what did I think about this, or what were they trying to tell me here? And to me, that was something that I really valued, and so I really wanted to make sure. I know I took a lot of time on Papo Nioh today, and hopefully folks out there are maybe now thinking about it a little bit differently, but I felt like it was worth taking the time today to talk about that. So,
Lula.
And by the way, that is not Lula. You know what? This may be a little bit weird, but whenever the guy said Lula, whenever Kiko talked about Lula, I just thought about the Venezuelan political figure Lula. Did anyone ever know? Okay.
She contemporary of Hugo Chavez.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay.
Oh, actually, yeah, I do remember that.
Lula.
Anyway.
Sage.
Yes.
What have you been playing?
Mostly I've been playing nothing, and by way of apology and in response to a couple of our listeners/readers,
yes,
I will explain why that is. 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, three or 4 weeks ago, I went to Colorado for a week and a half to take a black belt test. I've actually been a black belt for the last 2.5 years or so, but I wasn't officially tested because my sensei is in Colorado and I'm in New Mexico, and therefore that's hard to pull off. So I went to go do it, which was intense because I was training 4 to 8 hours a day every day that I was there. Because it's a lot of material. The test doesn't usually end up taking this long, but if they tested you on all the material that they could test you on, it'd probably be like a 3-hour martial arts test. So it's a lot of material. And at black belt level, you are expected to do everything with a degree of competency and flow, and not competency in the arts per se, but competency in being able to both because it's an art and because of real world applications, that if someone attacks you, and you can't do, you know, the art perfectly, beautifully, correctly, that you need to find a way to have it flow and be effective, even if you're in a bar and there's a throw that takes like 5 feet of space to do, and you're not going to be able to do that, but it's the best position for what gives the best move for the position you're in. How do you manipulate that so that it works?
Mm-hmm.
So black belt tests are more about that, and they often give you a bunch of random weird shit that's not, you know, technical arts that they want you to learn how to deal, but not learn, but they want to see that you are sort of evolved enough to be able to deal with those things.
Is this a metaphor for something?
No.
Okay.
This is my test.
Okay. Sorry.
So I took my test and I passed and I got a black belt and it was very nice. My sensei was very proud of me and gave me his black belt, which he has not done for any student in about 20 years.
Wow. Very so that good.
That was really exciting for me. I cared more about that than having passed. Because
that was certainly. Wow.
So that was really exciting, and then I came home and I was back for about a week.
Did you cry?
And then
that moment
when he gave me his belt,
yeah,
I did get a little teary actually, because then afterwards he like came up to me and was like, "You made me really proud of you," and I was just
Did his pants fall down when he gave you his belt?
No, but I made
because that kind of would have ruined the moment.
No, but I kind of made fun of him about that because it holds your gi top together. It doesn't hold your pants up. And he took it off, and so his gi is just sort of open, and I kind of poked fun at him a little bit because that's what we do with each other. And there's weapons demos on that, which went really well, and a thing called Rondori where like 5 people attack you and you have to deal with all of them, and that went really well. And weapons are sort of a big part of what we do, but especially our part of Key Society does, our area, like Colorado. So I came home for a week, and then this last week I have been, I just got back today a few hours ago, I've been in Colorado again, I flew this time, doing a weapons intensive with live swords and staves and the like. So that was a lot of fun, and I got to cut, they roll up to tommy mats and stick them on poles. And it's actually, it's not hard to cut with a katana if you know what you're doing, but if you don't know what you're doing, then it is hard, and it's not because the blade actually knows how to cut. Like, a well-made katana wants to cut, and if you just sort of follow gravity, they will slice through pretty much anything, actually. Maybe not like a full tree or a car, but short of that, they'll cut through.
Except in the, yeah, certain games.
That's a little anime-erific. Like, you can't really, like, you know, cut through an entire tree trunk. The katana. I mean, maybe if you had just amazing energy and ki, but but they can slice pretty well through anything. And the whole point is that if you are adding things like most people do, because they imagine a big bastard sword and they have to swing it real hard, and then you're gonna fuck it up, because if you tilt at all from the angle that you start at, it will get stuck in whatever you're cutting. Whereas if you just maintain the same angle and allow gravity to work its magic, it'll cut through things. And I did a very good job. I walked up and I did a, you know how you watch in Japanese movies, they cut down diagonally one way and then they cut back up diagonally the other way, and sort of, so I got to do that to a mat, and I managed to do it without fucking anything up. So that was good. So that's what I've been doing this week. I actually,
so you
do
played
have a
real
couple,
life Fruit Ninja.
I played real life Fruit Ninja, and I played real life Star Wars, because then at some point our head sensei, we were in a hot tub drinking sake, my sensei and our head sensei and me and his Uchidesh. And it was such a, I joke with my students that the Aikido is like Star Wars, because it's all about the force and, you know, being how you manipulate energy and everything. So I joke about that sort of halfway. I mean, it's kind of like that. You just don't have a lightsaber. But this was such a, like, cliche Star Wars Jedi moment that I almost did a double take looking for a camera somewhere. Like, we're sitting there and he says to me, you know, if you want to continue on this path to become a head instructor, you need to abandon your love and attachment of individuals, and if we tell you that you need to do that, what's your answer? And I was just like, what?
Done.
He was like, because love and attachment lead to too much emotional connection. And he literally went off on this thing where I was like, Yoda, are you Yoda? And so I think I got a conditional pass on that, because I told him, you know, I don't think you can do Aikido without love. And he was sort of like, maybe. And then
you should have just said done.
Well, no, because that would be a lie. And the other thing is that he's very Japanese. So his definition of love and my definition of love are somewhat culturally, they're somewhat right. different in addition to individual differences. Because he more meant in the attachment way, like, you can't let someone else become your whole life if you're going to walk down this pathway.
Right.
But then I left, and he was talking to my sensei, and he was like, well, I worry about her. You know, I see much of this other – they had this other student that, like, went down the dark side. And so he – No, this is true.
Anakin.
This is true, and it's all ridiculous. And, like, some –
he's a damn good pod racer, though.
Did he kill
the younglings?
No, but my sensei comes and tells me this, and he's saying that our head sensei, I'm not going to give any names, our head sensei was like, well, I see much of this other student in her, and you need to make sure she doesn't go down the dark path, but I'm worried that you have too much affection for her, so that your judgment will be clouded. I swear to God he used these words, and I was just like, this is something out of a movie, this is too ridiculous.
You should have told him that compassion, I define that as unconditional love, so you might say that Jedi are encouraged to love.
Right? Well, I mean, whatever. It worked out okay, but that after all of this, I looked at and realized I'm wearing my Star Wars Darth Vader pants, my Darth Vader pajama pants, and I just thought, like, the amazing coincidence of that was just too much. I couldn't help it. I laughed.
And then you woke up.
No.
And Sector was sleeping next to you.
Wow.
Lightsaber in hand.
Why do you always have to throw in Sector?
Well, I mean, you're talking about all this martial arts training, and Sector really better step his game up if he wants to find his way into your heart.
Yeah, his game is up there.
Video games is not enough. It has to be video games and martial arts and cooking. That's what I require. Mm. But it'll never work out, see, because on the path that I'm on, I'm not allowed to love. anyway, so that's as a brief explanation, those are the things that I was doing all week. There's one game that I managed to play on my phone, which is, well, I don't know if you would call it a game. It's called Node Beat. Have you guys heard of that?
Oh, yeah, I've got that. That's good.
Yeah, I actually kind of really like it. What it is it's sort of a digital simplified version of the two big machines that were machines. They made these two big tables in England and somewhere else, Jeremy, maybe you know, where you put down little pieces that are sort of, they match, I don't know if it's magnets or something else, but they're geared to work with the table. And you put little pieces down and they create a rhythm, like a beat. And depending on which way you turn them, they will up the beats per minute or make them go down. And then there you have another one that's a volume control and et cetera, et cetera. And you put down different things that make different instrumental sounds. So you're basically physically creating a song and able to physically manipulate it. Mm-hmm. So Node Beat is an app on the phone. It's cheap. I think normally it's $3, but I think right now it's actually on sale. I think I got it for 99 cents. Mm. And it's the same kind of idea. You've got a few things that you can pull out from a sidebar on the touch screen. You just pull them out and place them, and they're the control nodules. And then you pull out all these other little ones that are each different instruments, and you can, they'll link automatically to the control modules. But the cool thing about it is that they all float around, and so you can move them and connect them to other ones, and then, you know, every time you tap them, they change the rhythm, and it sounds complicated. It's very intuitive because you're doing
it. So you like it, Sage?
I do like it.
Do you love it?
Do you love it?
I feel like this is a trap. I don't understand.
It's a trap!
It's a trap. I don't know if I love it because it's on my phone and I always feel limited.
You can't love.
And love is forbidden.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're right. I don't love it.
Yes, good. Good answer. I'm trying to keep you from the dark side. You can't love anything.
Right, gotcha. But the other really cool thing is that you can...
be indifferent about every game that you play.
Yeah, it's just not true. I'm going to love the shit out of Dishonored when it comes out, so that's just already not true.
I'm going to tell Sensei.
Well, you don't know who he is, so good luck with that. Plus,
Sector,
I know
he... tell me the name!
Sector doesn't know either, but Sector also knows where you live, I told him.
Okay. Blue! Which scares me that you guys are talking, but Blue, what have you been playing?
Well, for starters, today I picked up Rock Band Blitz.
Yeah.
For those of you who haven't, who have maybe heard of it, but haven't really, you know, heard what it's actually about, basically it's a return to the music rhythm game style of Frequency, Amplitude. I believe the DS version of Rock Band, as well as Rock Band Unplugged on the PSP. And basically, instead of using, you know, the guitars, the drums, what have you, what instrument, basically use button presses in timing with music to play the songs. And another really big way to look at it is that Rock Band Blitz is a glorified track pack with a game bundled with it. Because Blitz basically has 25 songs that can be exported to Rock Band 3 with just the simple purchase of the game. Now, fortunately, the game itself plays really well. One difference between the previous, you know, Amplitude style games and Rock Band Blitz is that while previous games in the series used either three or four different, you know, notes or beats or however you wish to view it, the little icons that come down the screen. Rock Band Blitz only uses two. And, you know, I was playing Rock Band Unplugged a few days ago, and I just could not get any sort of a rhythm going with that. It's like two buttons are on, you know, you have the four colored notes, and two of the notes are on one side of the PSP, and the other two are on the other side. And I just could not get any sort of a rhythm going with it. It's like, you know, I'd, you know, tap the track over or whatnot. And, you know, it's just trying to do, you know, two different notes or whatever at the same time. It just, it never felt natural. It wasn't the sort of thing where I could just play the game and forget about it. I'm just focusing on playing the notes. It's not like thinking about the buttons, the button placement. And with Rock Band Blitz, I found that this problem has completely just been torn to shreds. It is a very, very simple, easy game to pick up and play. You only have, like I said, you only have the two notes scrolling down. Now, what makes the game really, really different from the typical Rock Band experience is power-ups. Basically, it kind of uses the Star Power style of energy gathering, but at the beginning of each song, you choose like a couple of different power-ups, and power-ups cost coins that you collect by finishing songs. So basically, I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head, like the Bandmate special feature. Basically, it's like a special power that allows you, that once you launch it, like the AI will take over and start playing that particular track, you know, like the guitar, piano, whatnot. And then that leaves you free to move on to other tracks and play notes, and that increases your score. And it as the loading screen says, it's all about the high score. It's, you know, high scores, you know, power-ups equal high scores equal bragging, bragging equals mad friends equals ha-ha. And that's exactly what it has been, because my entire afternoon pretty much revolved around getting my ass kicked by one Kumar from Twitter and Xbox Live. And I don't get really competitive with online multiplayer games. I don't bother with them, really. It's, you know, I always view it as an attempt at getting humbled, and I don't like being humbled. It's not very fun. But in this case, it's like, it's absolutely addictive. I mean, I'm fidgeting, you know, just being away from it for a couple hours. And, one feature that Rock Band Blitz has is, and this is another great selling point on it, is that it is compatible with the entire Rock Band DLC catalog. That includes Rock Band 1 and 2 exports, you know, Lego Rock Band, AC/DC track pack, Rock Band Network songs, Rock Band 3 downloadable content. It works with everything.
Beatles?
No Beatles, because
you said everything.
Well, I mean, everything that has an export to it. Okay. I mean, the Beatles hasn't had an export to it yet.
That's a good point. I didn't even notice that, because I've been playing Rock Band Blitz also this afternoon, just for a few minutes, and I was actually, it was really fun to go back through all of my old stuff and be like, oh yeah, I'll play that. So we, you know, loaded up some Bon Jovi, and I had everybody singing Bon Jovi. It's kind of neat. They've sort of done like a reverse DLC. I mean, usually you have to buy DLC per game. Well, now they've kind of done this thing where all the DLC that you had before is now sort of forward-looking into this new game. I mean, they basically did exactly what they had to with this, which is, you know what, nobody wants to get out their instruments. Let's give them a game with no instruments, but they still get to use all of the, you know, all of that, all the content that they had purchased. And so that definitely is neat.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely exceeded my expectations. I thought it was going to be okay, amusing, probably. I was for maybe like the first
Tell me about the track list. Because I kind of looked at it and I didn't see too many songs that really interested me.
Can I tell you the first thing that I put on when I got it was Moves Like Jagger.
I've heard that song, you know, because of being, you know, with it being so popular and everything,
right?
But this is the first time I ever sat down and listened to it front to back, and I gotta be honest, it actually kind of won me over. I actually like it.
I don't know. There was something about playing the songs and not having to worry. So there's something that feels a little less, I don't know, like just being able to sit down and just like fiddle your fingers, you know, to kind of go through a song. Like it's kind of like a little more chill than, you know, standing up with your guitar and hitting your drums. Like you can kind of relax with your music, which is kind of neat. Other things on the track list, I mean, I don't know that it's going to, you know, win anybody over, but, you know, it's got stuff like Bare Naked Ladies, 1 Week, Elton John, I'm Still Standing, Kool and the Gang, Jungle Boogie.
Cult of Person.
You guys aren't winning me over here.
No, yeah.
They had, they have a Cult of Personality by Living Color.
Wow.
Which, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Give It Away.
Okay.
Yeah, which is back from Rock Band 2, as is Spoon Man by Soundgarden, which did not make the Rock Band 2 export due to licensing issues.
Collective Soul, shine. And I just want to shout out to the people who made fun of me for liking Collective Soul on Twitter last week, because it made me feel really weird, but I love Collective Soul. I just want to put it out there to the whole world.
Who the hell made fun of you? They're good.
They are good! Like, can I tell you something? The only bands that I really like? Collective Soul and Weird Al Yankovic. Those are like my two. let no man say that I don't have a pretty good musical range there. But one thing to point out, though, and Blue did mention this, but I just want to make a special mention, is that the tracks, when you download the game, the tracks are actually not included in the download of the game. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense, because in order for them to be compatible, I don't know if you mentioned this, Blue, but not only are your old tracks compatible with the new game, but these new tracks are they're backwards compatible with Rock Band 3. So it kind of makes sense that the only way for these tracks able to go back into another title is you actually have another 700 megabytes of tracks to download after you get the game. So everybody be aware, it'll find any DLC that you've already got on your hard drive, but in order to actually play that track list, downloading the game itself doesn't do it. It'll ask you the first time, do you want to go ahead and download the game?
So Little Jimmy has nothing on his hard drive. He downloads Rock Band Blitz and he doesn't get to play it?
You might get the tutorial levels, maybe.
I think it has like the three songs. I think it's the Bare Naked Ladies, These Days by the Foo Fighters, and...
No, at least there's something. I thought there was.
Yeah, you might have enough time to download it on your Xbox. PlayStation users like me, you might need to give it a little extra time.
And when you boot up the game for the first time, it does, you know, the DLC detection, and that can actually take a couple of minutes, but after the initial setup, it only takes about, you know, 10 or 15 seconds to detect all of the DLC.
That's good.
And load it up.
Because Lips sucks at that. Every time I boot that up, it tries to figure out the songs, and it's really clunky.
Yeah, mine seemed like it tried to find the DLC a couple of times, so I'm not sure if it does that every time.
Yeah, you're talking about Lips?
No, Rock Band Blitz. Because I was kind of, I thought like once it had figured out all my tracks, it would stay that way. But it seems like it tries to detect every time. Here's one for you, Robert, just for you. Kelly Clarkson, Stronger.
I'm hitting the download button as we speak.
Do it.
Do it on 360. Get into a score war with me.
One other thing, Blue, I don't know if you were going to talk about this, but the other thing that Harmonix launched with Rock Band Blitz was Rock Band World. Have you looked into that at all, or do you know what that's about?
I haven't. That's the Facebook thing?
Yeah, so they also released, have now published to Facebook, an app called Rock Band World, which Blue and I think we were talking about this once before, about how we wouldn't be able to compare scores because we use different platforms. But if you have a social network already set up, and I believe it's Facebook only for the moment, that might be the only way they do it, but it will allow you to, through this third-party app, kind of this intermediary step, you can actually compare your performance with anybody who's using either Rock Band Blitz, or it will also display scores from Rock Band 3 as well.
I'm surprised Raptor doesn't do that more often.
You know, and now there's like Gamer Cred, and there's just a lot of stuff out there. I don't want to.
And they keep spamming me with Twitter direct messages.
Well, I've had a couple of people, like actual people that I know, tell me, you know, here's this link to Gamer Cred, come on and join. And I don't really know if anybody out there who's listening to this is using Gamer Cred, please get into the show thread and tell us a little bit about it and why it's worth using, because I don't quite see it yet.
Yep, neither do I. Please tell us.
Okay. So there is also, speaking of cred, there is also cred that you earn in Rock Band Blitz that you, once you gather enough, it unlocks more power-ups for you to use your coins on. And everything as far as power-ups goes is like a per song basis. So it's like 250 coins if you want to use this power-up for this song that one time.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because I haven't had much of a chance to play with it, but I don't think it's for the one song the one time. Isn't it like per session? Like, can't you spend the coins, and then for any songs that you play, it'll let you keep those power-ups, or is it really per song? Because it doesn't seem...
My experience has been that it's been per song. Of course, I haven't been doing the Blitz mode itself. I've just been going into the library and, okay, I want to play that song and that song. I think it is on a per song basis, though.
Yeah,
which
I haven't played it enough.
I kind of would have preferred that they made it just like one like large, you know, coin price, and then you can just use it just however you want.
Although that is kind of a neat idea, because then you can't just have the best power-ups to get the best score all the time. You actually have to kind of have earned it. But by the same token, then you... I mean, does that really mean that you won't be getting the best scores anyway? You'll just have to grind a bunch to get those scores?
Or
get those
it's
so there's grinding? I'm interested
well,
now. Let me hit the five button twice.
Yeah. Which is kind of weird too, because it didn't feel like you were earning coins enough to really be able to use the power ups every time. You know what it reminded me of? Like, this is going to sound weird, but there's a free to play game on the PlayStation Vita called Treasures of Montezuma Blitz, and it just is a coincidence that they're both called Blitz. But that has a thing where you can get power ups per level.
You
yeah,
always plug that game. Like each
do I? I have I mentioned it twice? Because I kind of keep going back. I kind of keep going back to play it. I mean, it's free.
I remember last time you mentioned since there's a patch.
There is a patch. It now, like I saw somebody mention, it's like a Michael Bay movie now because it's just like, poof, like gems are exploding everywhere. Like it's really kind of cool. But they do the same thing where you have certain little power ups that will, you know, populate your board, but you have to pay for them per session, like per board, and you don't earn them really that fast either. So there's ostensibly there are going to be some times where you're playing, you know, bareback without any, you know,
without,
yeah. Okay. Anyway.
On that note, speaking of bareback, we got some trivia. You guys ready to ride?
Oh, before you go, I know we're getting pressed for time, but I did finish Persona 3 Portable between the last time I was on the show. And there was a scene at the end where one particular line, when I watched it through the second time, it did kind of get me a little bit misty-eyed. Nothing streamed down my face, but my eyes did get a little wet. And Jeremy, I don't know if you're going to play through. You're going to play through at some point. No, so I don't know if I should spoil it or not.
Give me the spoilers. Give it to me.
No.
Well, I'll keep it as spoiler free. It's just one line of dialogue.
That's all you're going to say, Blue. That's all I'm going to allow.
Yeah. Basically, you know, I guess. The robot that's on the robot chick that's on the cover.
He's looking.
She talks with this really robotic voice. You know, she really talks kind of like this. And there was one scene at the end where she's talking and she gets really emotional and breaks down when she's talking about the main character giving her like a purpose, and she kind of breaks down and she's like, thank you. Of course I'm not good with the sappy stuff, but you know, video games really don't touch me in that kind of like a misty eyed kind of way. But for some reason, like that voice actress's delivery of that line, it kind of struck the core.
So it wasn't a Kevin Spacey in Usual Suspects. She wasn't faking it the whole time. I'm kidding. Make sure. Yeah, everybody's not crying right now. We got some trivia. You guys ready?
Ready.
Yes, indeed.
So let's start off with a few Madden questions. Number one, with the release of Madden 13 onto store shelves this week, it might be time to recall some memorable Madden moments. Which game is noted for its ambulance glitch, where an emergency vehicle responded to an on-field injury by mauling numerous other players in the process? Is that A, John Madden Football, B, John Madden 91, C, John Madden Football 92, D, John Madden Football 94, or E, Sports Talk Football with...
I'm going to say no, F, you. ESPN NFL 2K5.
Oh, everybody's
AKA
favorite.
The best football game in 3D.
Not going to say Joe Montana, Sports Talk.
Super Play Action Football.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
I'll go with 91.
Okay. Jeremy?
I was going to say 92. And by the way, this is the worst trivia you've ever done.
Why? Because it's
Madden.
Madden 91, Madden 92, Madden 93, John Madden goes to Space Camp.
No, but that's not, his fault that they're all titled the same thing. If we were doing something about Resident Evil, it would be the same.
Well, there's a difference with sports games, because sports games, it's like, blends together. There's no plot. It's a sport for that year.
Okay, yeah, but they get technically better over time.
I'll give you a sporting chance. If I'm right by saying that it was 92, this is the best trivia you've ever done.
Say the worst.
I said C.
Oh, C. Best fucking trivia ever, John Madden Football 92.
Yes, Eagle, you have reached a new pinnacle.
And B, there was no John Madden 91. It was just Madden football.
I didn't care about football anyways. I was a baseball kid growing up.
Hey, I got that right? That was what C
you
was?
Did. You did. So best trivia ever. Number two,
I'm still holding out. Goes to space camp.
Space camp. Well, no, when Trip Hawkins first approached John Madden about making a football title, the former Oakland Raiders coach wanted any game with his name on it to be as realistic as possible. Just how many years passed before EA's first game was released? 2, 3, 4, 5, or actually this is not true, and Madden was released within months of Hawkins' initial talks after Madden agreed to put his name and likeness on the box.
Oh, man. I don't fucking know. 3, 2, 2.
You know, I guess I'll go with the, just with, what was it, E?
As soon as Madden, yeah, I'm going to go with that too. Because it's the best trivia ever.
Uh-oh. Doom, doom. It took 2 years, guys. 4 long years. 84.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Madden. Who knew he was a stickler? So when Hawkins, number three, met with Madden at that Bay Area fast food restaurant, the hardware pitch man insisted on one thing that the game had to have. Name it. A, a higher statistical rating for the Oakland Raiders. B, player names and numbers. C, 22 players on the field. Or D, actual NFL team names.
That one, because I player... don't care.
I'm gonna go with E. Jesus, when will the Madden questions end?
I'm gonna go with F. Attenuation factor. No, actually, I know the answer to this one. I know the answer. It's the number of players on the field.
Correct answer, yes. Sage, I can forgive your indifference because you can't love anything but blue. I expect more from you. Okay.
Madden that much.
Sage, here's for a second. Number four. This week also sees the release of the Ratchet and Clank collection. You know what it's called in Japan, by the way? Ratchet and Clank, 1+2+3.
Really?
But he has giant eyebrows, so technically you get a +2 all the time.
So is that Ratchet and Clank 6?
Nice fucking reference.
So, Ratchet and Clank collection reinvigorated the first three series entries with high-definition visuals. Traditionally, the original developers don't perform lead development duties for these adaptations, assigning port duties to another developer. In this case, it was Idle Minds that were tasked with the job. Name the one game on the list that isn't on Idle's resume. Is it A, Neopets, The Darkest Fairy? B, Pain? C, Cool Borders 2001, or D, Dirt Jockey Heavy Equipment Operator?
I'm going to go with Cool Borders 2001.
Yeah.
I think that was when they were still handled by 989, was it? Nope. Or something like that?
What was B and C, so I don't get them backwards?
Pain and Cool Borders 2001.
And it's which one did he not do?
They.
Did they not do? Yeah, right.
Sage, do you love this show?
I don't love anything, Robert.
Good.
Do you love this trivia?
I can't. I don't love anything. I am indifferent and full of peace.
Yeah.
You love food?
She has one mission. Kick ass.
B. Trivia. B.
Correct answer. D. Dirt Jockey, Heavy Equipment Operator. Did you guys
really?
That one? That was a very curious PS1 title.
I've never even heard of it.
I picked it up. It was near the end of the PS1 life cycle, and you had like not so much a, what do you call that, the backhoes and front loaders, and you would wiggle the analog stick in different ways to kind of move dirt and do these different things around. It wasn't exactly fun. You got to the fourth level. It was more frustrating, but it was a good idea. So
really, playing with backhoes and front loaders is not fun?
Ew! I love the indifference and the
innuendo
sarcasm. Number five, Lights, Camera, Party not only brings an exclamation point to its title but also delivers 50 micro games to move owning PS3 loving players looking for some festive fun.
Which
minigame isn't part of the package?
No.
It's trivia. Twirling the move overhead to simulate spinning pizza dough. D, watching pies thrown at your face. C, throwing bananas at sleeping monkeys. Or D, using the move as a brush to paint a clown's face.
I'm going to go with A because I feel like they don't want you doing anything that's going to cause you to throw the remote. So spinning pizza dough is probably
no meat
liability.
That makes sense to me too. I think it would be kind of hard to replicate like spinning pizza dough with a little wand.
I'm going to say B because I hope that they're a little more creative than having you tilt the thing to try and dodge stuff. I'm going to say B.
Correct answer, worst trivia ever, using the move as a brush to paint a clown's face.
What the fuck?
That would be pretty good.
Yeah, I made that one up.
What crap. The fuck?
Good.
Painting clowns. That would be cool. got a bonus question, almost as
cool. Oh, dear.
If you caught the review, you know that Acquire's Way of the Samurai franchise is now in its fourth or fifth iteration, which depends if you're going by the number in the title or are including 2005's Samurai Western in the series. So name the company who hasn't had a hand in publishing one of these katana-carrying works. Is it A, Konami, B, Capcom, C, NIS America, D, Atlas, E, UFO Interactive, or F,
God.
All of the above?
Oh, God.
Atlas?
You say Atlas.
I don't know. I think I'm... You know what? I think I'm going to go with UFO.
UFO.
Capcom.
Correct answer, Konami.
Damn it.
I meant Konami.
The latest one NIS America is putting out in Europe. UFO Interactive did Way of the Samurai 3. Atlas did Samurai Western. Capcom put out the second one. So there you go.
Robert, I have to tell you, only you could make sports trivia awesome. This was a great trivia.
I've learned.
Are you being sarcastic?
No, you know what? I'm free to love, and I love Robert's trivia. How does that feel that I can love and you can't?
I'm full of hate.
He doesn't care.
My lack of love has pushed me to the dark side. They were wrong. They were terribly, terribly wrong. Yeah.
Speaking of wrong, we got some questions that will be oh so right in our mailbag. First one from JRPG Lover. Leva, I'm sorry. What's your favorite, least favorite B&M and online retailers, brick and mortar? I assume he's talking about not bowels movements.
As far as brick and mortar goes, I like shopping at Best Buy. They tend to be pretty good, and as far as price matching and online store pickup, and least favorite's probably GameStop because of the way they gut games and. Oh. Shit like that. If they just like Xerox the insert of one game like Big Lots does and then just put it on a rack, that would be perfect.
Oh, the Big Lots is the big think tank in corporate,
I hate to say it, but they really, but when it comes to like selling, games with, having the case out there but not the game itself.
Right.
Big Lots kicks GameStop's ass.
Yep.
Blue, I think I'm exactly the flip side of you, but let me tell you why. Because as much as I loathe GameStop, but as far as midnight releases go, they seem to handle them a lot better, having waited in line at both establishments for things. Best Buy sort of doesn't really, and which is fine. They're an electronics store. They're not a specific game store, whereas GameStop seems to like have a system down and you're in and you're out and it's not that painful. Also, at GameStop, you can haggle. Even though they're corporate, like Best Buy, you can't haggle with them at all. And GameStop, you can sometimes...
Give me $5 for grid, motherfucker.
You can sometimes... maybe it's because I'm a chick, I don't know. But sometimes I've been able to haggle them into good deals on things. Not usually on brand new games. I mean, brand new games or whatever. But usually if I stand there and I'm like, no, I think I'm going to give you this amount for these three games. What do you think? They're like, oh, okay.
Wow.
I think you're just getting the chick benefit.
Yeah, I've never been able to do that in my life.
Maybe you guys don't extend enough key. You see, this is a Jedi thing. You got to extend enough key that they want to do it for you.
My key is fully extended.
Yeah, that's gross.
I saw a thing on Reddit really quickly. A guy took a live pigeon into a GameStop and he told him to give him something for free or he'd release the pigeon. And they wouldn't do it, so he let the pigeon loose. And I guess it just kind of wandered around and they're like, no, just take the pigeon. So he took the pigeon back and they gave him his game for free.
Let the pigeons loose? Are we making like a sexual reference to like Taz or something like that?
I wonder if he got that from that, there was that, I think it was a Gamefly advertisement where it showed a what was clearly a spoof of GameStop and people being pissed about the prices and like breaking things and throwing demo bots to windows. And I wonder if he decided that was the way to go.
For my pick, I was going to say Best Buy. I love and hate them in equal measure. Recently, they had a sale I learned about through Cheap Ass Gamer, and I stayed up till I think midnight to order some $5 games. I was one of the first people to order Dead Rising off the record for PS3, and I don't hear from them for probably about 3 weeks, and then they decide to cancel it. And
how about that copy that of happened, Rhythm and Fever?
I didn't get that either.
No.
I did. I had to do in-store pickup on that. I think it was something fucked up with their site that night, because it's like, you know, everything was out of stock, and some places they didn't have it anywhere, but I ended up finding it at a store that was supposedly out of stock.
I could have done an in-store pickup, but I didn't have a lot of time that week, and, you know, you got to make it there in 7 days. But then again, who else is selling games for $5?
$5. Yeah, see, that's the thing. So for me, I really like Amazon because I have Amazon Prime. Love Amazon Prime. Highly recommended.
Yep.
I like picking the bones at Best Buy the way I used to like picking the bones at Circuit City. I feel kind of bad about it, but hey, there it is. And actually, I even like GameStop. I hate that they do the gutting, and I happen to know that there's a website somewhere out there that did a really good expose on gut copies of games in California region of the country, and how they are allowing the included codes. See if you can find it on the internet. Awesome website. You may have heard of it. It's Tech Gaming, by the way. It was a really good one. You know, it was like a year or two ago, but if you guys go out there and check this thing Robert did on, I mean, it was really literally like this expose. He would go in and find, I mean, he was like picking through all their stuff, so he was kind of a weirdo, but it was a really good, really good article. But
I had a lift in every store too, so I was a weirdo. It's like, do you have Crackdown, the original, or?
No, that was a great piece of original journalism. But I actually really have to hand it to GameStop because they are the only place out there that if you want something, I mean, let's be honest, the shelf life of a video game on your average retail, you know, brick and mortar shelf is like 3 weeks. So if you want anything beyond that, new or used or whatever, you're pretty much going to be going to GameStop. Either that or you're going to be going to eBay. So I appreciate the fact that GameStop exists because I can get last-gen stuff. I can get stuff that was early in this gen that's hard to find. So they definitely have their uses. You just have to know what you're in for when you go in. So
yeah.
Sure. Okay, next question.
I lost the questions.
Okay. From Philip, what do each of you think about Press Reset, the story of Polygon?
I had to watch that, actually. I watched through the trailer.
What is the story? Because I don't know the story.
Same here.
It's about these guys who make a website. So you don't have to answer it, because honestly, I feel personally like it's kind of a non-issue. The thing about Polygon is they put that group together specifically because they're a bunch of personalities that people would recognize, and now they're making a little documentary about how they put together this website full of guys that people would recognize, and everybody's pissing all over them.
I didn't recognize a couple of the guys. The one with the dog in the car and the baby. Who's he?
I have
to. Yeah, those personalities. The guy in the tattoo, getting a tattoo, which I thought was kind of cringeworthy.
Getting a tattoo? I don't know. It sounds like Arthur Geese, but I didn't actually see the thing.
Well, I watched it both, just on the question. Depending on, you know, I don't know, people's response, I may watch it, I may not. I'm not really pining to. I don't have much free time, so I don't see myself watching a documentary about people that review games. But I think the problem with, if it is in fact a documentary, is that usually a documentarian is the one who decides what's worthy of kind of the camera's eye and further study, not the subject. And in the age of YouTube, it might be changing. But one of the things, of course, for any documentary, you need kind of, you know, you need some tension. And unless Brian Crescente plays the foil, I don't think moving for a job is that interesting. Like, at first, I almost thought it was satirical, because it just seemed like this is hardly a compelling impetus for a documentary. And I'm not dismissing that, but you know, even reality TV, they take and they fictionalize certain elements to create a sense of tension, and that I thought was kind of missing. Other than, hey, we could fail at this, we could succeed at this. And then the other thing, I guess, was kind of the seriousness of it. I was really kind of surprised. Kind of like you said, Jeremy, most documentaries, they introduce people with kind of on-screen names and titles. And it almost seemed like we're expected to know these people. And I didn't know about half the people in the promo pieces. So that was kind of disorienting for me.
Yeah, I mean, my bottom line is I'm not going to watch the thing, but I'm also not going to be upset.
Before, I think you've already judged it. What if, you know, let's say it comes out and people are saying, wow, that's really cool. Maybe the promo shot really didn't talk about something. Maybe they look at games, and this is kind of the thing that may, you know, turn me off, though. They said, well, we're looking at games in a whole new way. We're reinventing journalism. What if they deliver on that promise? Would you watch it?
Well, then I can go and watch it later. I don't have to watch it right now.
Okay.
I mean, the worst thing I'll say about it, because I'm mostly just tepid on the whole thing. Like, I'm not really interested in it, but I'm also not going to get all worked up over it. Some people are really upset, which is really kind of weird.
What do you think they're upset about it?
I think they're just upset because people are like, oh, we're going to make a documentary about ourselves and all, you know, screw all of you. You know, big
deal.
Yeah,
narcissism sort of faded out with the late 80s, early 90s.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really.
Narcissism is in full gear.
Yeah, but it's not, like, attractive anymore. You have to pretend you're not being narcissistic. Okay. It's not like late 80s, early 90s where it was cool to be a narcissist.
Okay. Yeah, but that's just false modesty, which is another form of, I don't know, it's just another way of lying to people. no, but, I mean, the worst thing I can say about it is, like, I could never really see, like, 60 Minutes doing a documentary on the miracle that is 60 Minutes. You know, like, they're not going to do a documentary on themselves. And what it kind of feels like to me is, do you guys remember that scene in Anchorman when they're trying to take the promo shots? Yeah. And they're all like, okay, everybody dance, and point. And they're supposed to point at each other, like, in all those promos. So I kind of feel like it's like Polygon, like, everybody dance and point. You know?
I don't know. The thing that bothered me, I guess, was the guy in the tattoo parlor. And it just felt like, okay, they're selling something about his personality. He's like edgy. It's like, come on, you know, we have to use these tropes to kind of articulate, you know, stereotypes about people. And I just thought, you know, even if he's into that and he wants to express that part of himself, it just seemed kind of fake to me.
Yeah. Not to mention, if that's how he's trying to show that he's edgy, he's way off. My ex-boyfriend's mom just got a fucking tattoo. You do not have to be edgy anymore to get a fucking tattoo.
What'd she get a tattoo of? Polygon?
No, I think she got, like, live, laugh, love or something like that around her calf.
Oh, God.
What if she got one that said mom, would it be like a tattoo of herself?
Or... the ultimate narcissism.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then it would be okay. Unabashed. Narcissism.
Like if it's genuine.
Well, until we have a test tube future, it's impossible to not have a mom. So it could just be, because you could not have kids, but you can't not have a mom. So everyone would just assume it's referring to your mother.
What if you're an android?
I'm saying until we have a future where there are people who either come from test tubes or are robots.
Okay,
and...
robots. Okay.
Oh, hey, that's already happened. You know, Persona 3 takes place in 2010. It's already happened.
That's a video game.
Here's a question
from Philip. How do you handle negative criticism? Any tips?
You say, fuck you.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I got a few people, and much like I do every week, I get a few people. I was trying to remember the name. It said something about right winger. I'm probably giving more airtime than I should. Okay. But he said, I don't like your site. I'm unsubscribing. And, you know, hit me for 2-3 seconds. You know, I always don't like to hear about losing readers for whatever reason, but I can't force people to do that. And I try to, you know, to look at the site. I try not to let those kind of, you know, comments bother me too much. Yeah, I'll admit that they do. But most of the time I try to look for things that are a little bit more constructive, where they say, how come you didn't address this in the review? Or today in Way of the Samurai 4, one of the localization team came and said, hey, this was a decision to turn one of the characters into Melinda Mega Melons. And that was close to Japanese. And in this case, I was wrong. I didn't know Japanese. I didn't know that the term, you know, the actual name was fairly close, and there was a pun in there. And so, you know, I make mistakes and live and learn. I'll try to be better about that in the future.
Yeah, that's the thing, is not all negative criticism is bad. I mean, when I if I get anything bad, I like to really consider. I think you take it with a grain of salt. You look at it and you consider whether or not anything actually helpful was said, even if it sounded mean, like maybe it's something that could help you be better. And then, like, I used to get a lot of, well, not a lot, I got a few negative comments for some of my earlier reviews because my writing style was not great. Whatever, I was new, and right. And that's fine. And there were people saying, like, you know, this is disorienting, or I don't really understand what you're saying here. And it wasn't hurtful. It was, I mean, it was quote unquote negative, but it was really helpful. It was okay, thank you. And so I always responded with a, you know, thank you. That's good and helpful for me to get better. If someone gets on and they're just being a hater, if anyone has seen my comments, generally what I say to them is quit being an ignorant hater and either go fuck yourself or come up with something better to say. So
yeah. So Nintendo, eat that.
There you go.
I like to, I have two ways of really dealing with this. One of them is if it's just like a typical hater, just, you know, like the hater's going to hate type thing. I'll either type out some really just outrageous, you know, tearing them to shreds kind of comment, or something sarcastic, something angry or whatever, and either close the window without posting it, or I sometimes refer back to like a Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya gif that says, watching you fail at life puts a smile on my face. something like that.
Right.
It's kind of, I mean, when you get negative criticism, it's hard not to kind of take it personally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you know, but, you know, Blue should only be on the show like once a month. It's like, and I'll see that and I'm thinking, he hates me. He hates everything about me, and he wants to beat up my dogs.
No, no. I don't know where you're getting that. What was I going to say? I was going to say something here. Jeremy.
Well, I usually respond with circular logic until everybody forgets what we were talking about, and that way I avoid all negative criticism.
So, Jeremy, no.
How about naked criticism?
No, I was going to say, I remember reading a couple people. I don't want to name the people, but a couple of high-profile...
Robert responds by shaming the people publicly.
No, a couple of high-profile writers for Joystick, Kotaku... And they would get into these pissing matches with the trolls. And what was the point? You're never going to win. And that always kind of confused me. Interaction's good, but, you know, when it's just this escalating, hey, screw you, kind of battle, I don't
see. Well, isn't that the whole point for trolls is they just want attention? So you're just giving them exactly what they want.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And I,
so why not just ignore them? Because that's what will make them unhappy, and then you don't have to put in any extra effort.
I don't know. I was thinking maybe web hits, that they keep coming back if you give them attention.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, don't you?
So really, they're playing the same game then. They're like, the troll wants attention, and I want the publicity, so, and the web hits, so I'll keep responding.
Yeah.
You know what? Wasn't it Nintendo or whatever that was bitching about our Alexia ranking or something like that? And then he posts multiple comments, which in turn lead to multiple page views. It's like, you view the article. And then when you comment on it, then it reloads the page with a new comment. And then if you post another comment, it reloads the page again with a new comment. It's like, you're bitching about our web hits, but you are, in fact, by bitching about it, contributing to the fact that we have a pretty good number on Alexia or something.
But that's because a lot of people, even people who use the internet a lot, don't actually understand how the internet works or how things like Google sites are pulled up or Alexa ratings work, or like, it's really sad how many people are using this thing and are completely uninformed about it. They like know how to get on it and get into their Gmail and troll sites, and that's all they know about the internet.
But you'd think, like, if somebody knows, you know, Alexia and knows to, you know, check the number on Alexia, you'd think they'd actually know that, like, by leaving multiple comments and
also,
leaving multiple page views, that they're contributing to the thing that they're
They must know, because
about.
Your average person doesn't install Alexa for no reason. You check you install Alexa to kind of check your own site, to monitor, you know.
Dude, seriously, but you'd be surprised, because for a lot of – it's like Idiocracy. For a lot of people, just the number – is enough. Just the knowing that electrolytes are what plants crave are enough without knowing what electrolytes are. So just knowing that Alexa gives you a number that is a ranking system of all the sites is enough for a lot of people. They don't go out of their way to look it up and see what that score is comprised of. I know it's shocking, but like, a lot of people are that willfully ignorant. They're just lazy and they don't care.
Sage, did you just make an Idiocracy reference?
Yes, I did.
We need to go out on that. Good night, everybody.
Do you love it or Idiocracy, Sage?
I don't love anything blue except for your dogs.
Aww, thank you.
We'll go on that note. So if you like what you heard today, you'll probably love what we write. Head on over to techgaming.com for latest reviews, previews, discussions, and new release info. Somebody deleted the Twitter info. Who was that? But I know everybody's Twitter by now. I am Robert Allen, and what's my Twitter? Oh, shit. No, I'm at tech_gaming. We got Sage, who is at Samurage. We got Jeremy Lamont, who is at Jeremy_LA MONT. And we have Blue Swim, which is at Blue Swim.
Okay, now what's the capitals in Blue Swim?
The B and the S. BS.
Something I am full of, I might add.
You got me on that. That was good. That was good. Okay. Good night, everybody.
Yeah. Yay. Bye.
Sailor Moon reference goes here.